This week, we gather in the cantina to chat about Timothy Zahn's captivating follow-up to Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising. After discussing many of the brilliant ideas presented in the book, we examine whether bits of Zahn's story could carry over into the upcoming Ahsoka series or fill in the gaps for concepts witnessed in the sequel trilogy. We then close the chronicle with some speculative chat about the feature-length New Jedi Order film and how it, too, might borrow from Legends. All this coming up on
Cantina Chronicles.
Good to see you. Second episode of Cantina Chronicles. No longer stuck in the rigid confines of Core World News. we are now just at the bar. Yep. I'm enjoying a bitter Bothan. Today.
Yeah.
You can check that out. That'll be on the thing. It is an equal parts cocktail of Lillet Blanc, bitter Bianco, and Mezcal.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
It might have been two mezcal cocktails in a row, but just let me have this. There's, it just felt right for some reason today.
Yeah.
As we're talking about Thrawn, Dark Force Rising, today, that's going to be the bulk of what we're talking about. The second book in the Legends Thrawn trilogy. Pretty stoked about that. But I figured the Bitter Bothan was an apropos title.
It's perfect. Gives you the political edge at a party.
Indeed.
Manipulate a swath of people and have them think your way without having to, use violence.
Right.
Whatever they say in this book about Bothan culture.
Do you guys want to start with Bothans for a shot? Because we talked a lot about Bothans last week, but Grant, you're a big Bothan guy. You are the Bothan
spy.
This
is really where we get to open up with the Bothans. We really get a lot of Bothan action in this book.
Tons.
In particular. Yeah. And I love all of it. Like the political intrigue with the different council aides and the different Bothans you meet in the story is so much fun. Like I love that. I love, can we trust this person? Can we trust this other Bothan we meet? Like, Brello, the one we meet later, the Bothan we meet earlier, the council aide. Mm-hmm. Her name is slipping my mind right now, but she's that character is great too.
Cena and Ibanez.
Yeah, and then Renes. Is great in this book. I think Zahn really crushes the sort of name design for all the different non-humans. And I think the Bothan especially, he just does a great job. Like I love those characters. Totally. Yeah, and I think this book's so much fun because you get Han talking about Bothans.
I was going to say.
Sort of like actually talking about, you know, how he can outsmart or outwit them. And it, you know, if he's being judged and sort of all that intrigue is with Han. And that's really fun. So I like that.
And trying to play diplomat.
Yeah.
Trying to play Leia's role. That moment of him speaking with Bell Iblis about, like, you can back out now. Like, you can just go. You can just call it off right now and everything's fine. You'll be fine. If you keep going, not so much. It was a really interesting moment for Han.
All right. Before we get too deep in the weeds, I do want to just for Grogu, just be like, essentially in this book, there is a derelict Old Republic fleet in the galaxy and it's a race for it. And that's in broad strokes what happened in this book. But, you know, fascinating. You've got plot lines with obviously with Thrawn, Sabath and Luke, Han and Lando are on a great adventure together. Leia's on Hanagri.
Yeah, Hanagri. Yeah,
Hanagri.
Because it's like the home planet of the Nogri, which is, again, this is some of my favorite stuff in Star Wars. I think the Thrawn and Leia sort of duality of their relationship with the Nogri is one of the coolest parts of the Zahn trilogy. And I'm hoping that in the future we can get a sort of stand-in for the Nogri, or the Nogri themselves is like,
I mean,
primitive.
I mean, we got
species. We got them in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Rook's there. Nogri. Rook exists.
Rook is in Rebels. I'm just, yeah, yeah. And I guess the Nogri as a whole are in Rebels. And I guess Filoni would be someone who's going to probably carve in more Nogri stuff. Yeah.
But I bet we'll see more Nogri.
I think what I love about this is the Matrek talking about the like the war in the sky and sort of like a primitive outlook on what are giant Star Destroyers fighting, you know, Republic cruisers in space, like, and sort of what that, it's almost like it feels like the myth come alive when the Matriarch is talking. And I thought their whole culture is so cool. I love that Thrawn loves the art and is,
yeah,
I love when they talk about Darth Vader and like, it's just it's so cool. So yeah, I love Hanogri.
They weirdly, like, Vader in this whole, like, the first two parts of the trilogy comes off like fairly good, right? Because it's like it's the rest of the Empire that seems to really dupe the Nogri, right? It doesn't seem like it's Vader. It seems like once Vader hands them off to Thrawn, that they have this whole scheme with the Nogri.
You even see it with Pelion to a degree, where Pelion's like, why are we sticking around and watching these rituals and hanging out with the Nogri? Like, I don't understand why we're here.
They're something less than a tool to them.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, dude, just to, like, you know, 30,000 foot view on this thing, like, I was telling Grant that I want to get a Timothy Zahn tattoo on my ass. Like, I just love this writing so much. And I know this was probably like their flagship trilogy. Like, they probably put a lot of work into this trilogy.
It is the organic continuation. I mean, like, Leia is super pregnant, like, the twins are coming.
Yeah.
You got this character going, bring me your sister and her unborn children throughout the book. And it just feels like, yeah, that's actually probably where things would be. And then it's also like, what a fun way to take the story. And Leia's so centric to the story. And I just think that's, it's fun.
It's true. I mean, I'll echo it. I think from last week, this is the first story post episode 6 in the old EU. I mean, this set the entire framework and groundwork for what the new what the old EU was going to look like when they thought they wouldn't get any more films.
And Zahn just checked all the boxes on it in such like a great way. Like, I mean, all the storylines are great. All the characters are written wonderfully. It's just kind of a shame that it never became, you know, a script. But, you know, I'm wondering why, what is the barrier in the crossover from like getting these like novel writers who and like comic book writers that get the voices so right into script writing? And I know, like, from a practical adult standpoint, it's like, well, this is their job and this is their job and whatever. But it's like, if we were all high schoolers, it'd be like, get the kid that does the writing best to help work with us. Like, it doesn't matter what his background is or why. It's just like, just get the people with the raw talent and let's see what they can do.
And to that point, I feel like Zahn's writing is all generative and there's not as many callbacks as you'd get in I think most Star Wars stories that are mainstream Star Wars stories nowadays, with all the synergy that's going on. I love that Zahn makes bizarre choices. He explores huge new, you know, sectors of space. He brings in alien species that I know nothing about and teaches me so much in just a few pages. And it's like, I don't know other stories. And then also using the characters we know and love, the main characters, like the actual legacy characters that we hold dear, but using them so deftly, like you said, and just writing these organic adventures for Lando and Han, like putting Chewie with Leia. Chewie and Leia are teamed up in the comics a bunch because of this book. Like, there's so much set up in this book that I think a lot of people love and admire and want to continue in canon stories. And like this book particularly in the three books, I think is one of the most influential. Like, I love this book. The Hidden Fleet, come on. Like, all this, if you're not doing a super, if you're not doing like a super base or sort of like, you know,
something like that. Massive weapon, whatever.
Yeah, massive, like, super weapon. Like, if you're not doing that storyline, the Hidden Fleet storyline is another giant,
so cool,
sweeping epic as well. And I think this story, this book in particular just does a good job.
It's at the perfect point in the history of the New Republic and the Remnant Empire, right? Because they're both kind of struggling, right? Like, yeah. they don't have, so they don't need a super weapon to be victorious. They just need a few more ships than the other group, right? Yeah. And that's it. And yeah. and so I appreciate that storyline. You know, the Chewie and Leia stuff, I feel like, is just like Zahn watched Empire and the yeah. moment where like Chewie's choking Lando and like and right. and Leia's Leia just having in, yeah. that moment of just being like, yeah, like just basically, yeah, choke him. I yeah. that's one of my yeah. favorite Star Wars moments of just like of her just being, yeah. I don't care. Like, I feel like he took that. He's just like, well, let's further explore this relationship between these two characters. And there's that moment in this book when she finds out that the Nogri have been being exploited for like, yeah. I spent 6 hours in a car today driving yeah. home from Maine.
So my brain it's a safe space, right? buddy. It's just yeah. the three of us and everyone.
Yeah,
listening.
That's it. No one's listening. It's fine. But the, yeah, for like what 44 years, I think it was. Yeah. And she gets so angry. So I love that moment. Chewie comes in ready to just kill everyone. She's like, I'm not in danger. I'm just furious.
I
love that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's really funny because like she is the cunning diplomat and mm-hmm. he is just pure raw fury. I mean, yeah. and a very capable electrician mechanic.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And it's just like, that's a funny pairing. He's just like raw emotion and just will like absolutely light up anyone. You know, they even talk about like his fighting style in this, where he's like, mm-hmm. he ends up working with Kadarik, I think. I'll have to look that up again. But the Nogri character, and like, you know, he gets the best of Chewie with like, you know, Krav Maga or whatever, space Krav Maga.
Right.
And so, like, Chewie just uses his pure strength most of the time to fight, but he's, like, giving him fighting techniques and stuff.
Kabarak?
Kabarak.
Yeah.
Kabarak. There we go.
Kabarak. Yeah.
He's a real one, Kabarak.
Yeah, Kabarak was one of my favorite characters. I think the Nogri were just so well-written, and I love Zahn's attention to detail when it comes to Kabarak and the Matriarch, or that Matriarch. I forget what that.
Yeah, it's so close to Matriarch, but it's like Matriarch or something.
Loved all that stuff.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, so that was like your diplomacy mission, and I loved that. You know, that's what I love most about Star Wars, right? Is getting deep into niche cultures. It just makes the galaxy feel huge, where you're like, we're just on one planet, but there's all these customs and rituals and art. And you can just go down that rabbit hole, and it's so, I mean, that's so fun for me. And then you've got this character, Thrawn, who loves art. And so it's instantly, with every people you run into, you're going to go down another layer into their artwork and like their customs and their culture, because like that's how this guy operates and understands them. And I just feel like as a Star Wars consumer, that's like just makes the experience so rich. It's just so great, dude. It's just so great.
There's such great reveals in this book too. Like when you first see the Star Destroyer on Hinogri like appear, and Leia's like, "Whoa, you betrayed us!" And it's like, "No, like this is like we were actually like after Vader left, we were like you know Thrawn was given command of Hinogri and all this. It's just so much history, and then." I don't know. I thought that part of the book was so good.
Yeah, and the big conclusion to that is obviously like she thought it was like 8 years, but it was like, you know, the fall of the Empire, and she's like, oh, we did it, instantly blaming herself. We did this to this country. But then she found out it was 48 years ago, and it was done probably by the Separatists, or, you know, I don't even know in Legends what they called the other
They didn't. They were really playing it fast and loose with the Clone War stuff, but like,
yeah.
Boy, when you start listening this old to you, you're like, it's real hard.
I actually like this more.
Yeah, me too.
I almost like the mystery surrounding the Clone Wars and the sort of OT idea of the Clone Wars and how this book handles the Clone Wars. We know so much now and it can only be one way, but it's like, it's fun. It's fun when Luke goes into the data logs and he reads Joris Sabaoth's like history and where he's been throughout history. And you have that written down? I'm sure one of you guys has that written down.
I didn't take note of it.
There are so many events listed that sounds so interesting and just so intricate. Like the world building that Zahn does is really profound. And then I love the way that they were marking the Clone Wars. And I love that. The outbound flight stuff and the Katana fleet. I love all of that sort of backstory that's sort of everyone's just touching on throughout the book. It's so great.
Yeah, it was really deftly done. It was like they haven't defined it. They know they're going to want to define it eventually, the Clone Wars. And so he just sort of was really vague about it. They called it the Old Republic, which I thought is fun. I mean, technically it is the Old Republic, not the New Republic. But yeah, we would have just called it the Republic, I guess, nowadays. But yeah, it's great. The history is awesome, and the story's great. And you know, the roles. Han's role, I really, really love.
Yeah.
Because he's like
great Han material. He's like, so active. Like he feels like a leader in this. And yeah, I don't know. There's fun jokes too, where it's like Senna's like, I'm like, let me fly. It's like to like sit back, I'll fly.
Yeah.
I was like, I like that. Like this, just Zonda has fun with Han too. So it's like, I think it's fun.
And he's like, he's the clever one, right? He's there to be clever and come up with, you know, unorthodox solutions, and he does it over and over and over and over again. It's just like there's no like, you know, back to the wall situation that Han can't figure the way out. And like, and Luke is like not that clever, but he does have the Force, and it's like they're both equally important in this book as far as like getting themselves out of scrapes. Lando, I'm trying to like, Lando kind of does everything well, I guess. He's the
Lando's
more,
awesome.
He's kind of like the information network.
Yeah, he's like the information expert. Yeah. He knows everything about the galaxy. Like he knows about that casino.
He's like an information broker.
And he knows like the ins and outs of business, not so much politics, but like, you know, he knows smuggling, like legal business, illegal business. Just he has
Han and Lando are actually super useful to have around. Like they know all the like the seedy underbelly, like between the two of them, they know almost everything. I was like, they've been around the galaxy, and you feel that in this
book. Yeah, all right. So the other thing I love about this trilogy that didn't really happen in the other trilogies or in Rebels regarding Thrawn, he's wrong in this book a bunch.
Yep.
Like, he's confidently wrong, incorrect.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, there's one where he's like, but obviously we're supposed to go to the Palani system. Thrawn finished for him. Yes, an error on my part, obviously, something more. Oh, so that's him, like, acknowledging it. You know, there's one, like, where he was like, obviously, like, Han and whoever are going to go to the Palani system to chase this down. But they were on Kav or whatever. And then he, you know, he thought he knew where everyone was going to go. He was right about Luke eventually going to see Sabaoth. But, it was, I loved that. I love that we were like, I was like, oh, he's actually wrong this time. And I mean, he can pivot faster than anyone, but still.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't like, he owns it when he's wrong. Like, because the other one I always thought of in this one, I remember this one, was when he assumed Talon Card was going to, it would take longer for Talon Card to give them the Dark Force. And it was pretty instantaneous, right? And he admits that. Still, he ends up pivoting and winning.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I appreciate that in the stats, not just, because I feel like when you read the newer Thrawn stuff, and I think it's because he is the protagonist of those books.
Yeah.
He's too Sherlock Holmesy for me, Kate, in the new ones, where he's just always right.
He's always
right. He's lionized 10 steps in those books, whereas in this trilogy, I think he's, like you guys said last podcast, I think he's just made out to be an outright villain. And Mara Jade, like throughout the book, senses like, oh, this is why Palpatine made him a Grand Admiral. He like, look at his eyes, like he's got these gleaming red eyes, and he's just, he seems like he's always gonna like lay the death blow on someone at any point in time. That's, it's kind of, that's hyped up in the book. So I think this book does a good job of being like, Thrawn will kill you.
I do, but I love that Pelion still has undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder from being part of the Empire, being with Vader and everyone, because every single time something goes wrong, he's like, and this is when Thrawn's going to kill everyone. And it never happens. He's been so traumatized for being around Vader and the Emperor.
Absolutely.
I love the mirroring of the Yoda stuff in the original trilogy with Jorah Sabaoth, where it's like he has to, he's reluctantly going to visit this guy, and there's talk of training, but he's like, oh, this guy is mercurial and unstable, and this is not a good idea. And he keeps yelling about my sister, and it's like, it's pretty, there's so many red flags. He calls like anyone who's not a Jedi a lesser being, like several times, and Luke's like still like, hunky-dory, and I'm like, is this like he starts to catch on, but it's like I would have written in earlier that Luke is like, okay, instant red flag.
They gave I know, it's weird. They gave Luke like a Thrawn moment when I think he was talking to Mara Jade about like, oh no, he's just insane. Like, I think Luke like clued in earlier on that he was insane, but they kept doing the internal monologue at the same time of him questioning everything, which I don't mind, right? Like, as much as like Luke in this canon, in this version of canon, Luke has had, it's not the comic book series that we have now where he is meeting tons of old Jedi and reading a lot of old texts. Like, here he had Ben and Yoda and that was it, and really nothing else, and this is the next Jedi he meets. And so I buy it that he's like going, is there something to what he's saying? I mean, Ben and Yoda were different. Yoda got weird, but he goes for a while. And he's like, oh no, this guy's just,
he's just
straight
bonkers.
Up crazy. Yeah.
He's like, is it like maybe all the Force ghosts talking to him, making him crazy? That's probably it. Yep. And I'm like, that's a weird guess. So I have two antagonist notes in this book, and this is one. Because the same thing. I was just like, I'm like, Luke. Like, I mean, as a, like an observer, you're like, Luke, you know enough. You know enough.
Yeah.
Your heart's in the right place. You know enough. Like, just like four sentences from Yoda is enough for any Jedi, frankly. And Ben Kenobi, you know, like at this point, especially from, you know, apotheosis, like once they've passed beyond the physical state and like are you know, omniscient. Like, just listen to those dudes. They got you right where you need to be. And it's like, you know, like this is like, you know, anger, fear, desire. He's like, you know, just the basic stuff that Yoda taught you. This guy, every word out of his mouth is like going against it.
But George Sabath does say he's dying. Like, there is like buy-in that he gets from Luke because he says he's dying. He just wants to pass on his knowledge. Like, that is an interesting angle. I think
he's drawing a parallel to Yoda.
And the other angle that I appreciate that they play off in this is that Luke is freaked out, right? Luke is freaked out about having to be the teacher of all the new Jedi. He has no confidence in that, which I love the fact that he's like, I could be a good Jedi, but not a good teacher. I buy that. Like, he's a farm boy. He's had very little, like, whatever. And so I appreciate that puts him down the path a little longer because he so wants to just pass off these duties to this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that keeps him on, but I'm just like, Luke, dude, you know better, buddy. Like, I know better than this, man. Like, you know, and it makes so much more sense in canon that he goes on like an information seeking mission to really start gaining knowledge from books and, you know, things that are concrete texts from Jedi, and working from that rather than like seeking out. I mean, as soon as he was talking to R2, and R2, it didn't phase R2 at all. R2's like, this guy's bonkers. We need to go. And like the first time they sat down, and Luke's like, no, you know, I'll give everyone a chance and I save all the lives and I do all the cool things, bro. It'll be awesome. And and I'm like, I'm with R2 on that one, man. I'm like, can you imagine just R2 ripping butts on top of the like X-Wing? Just like being like, oh, this guy's so dumb.
Waiting for Mara Jade to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
And be like, you get me. You totally get me more than more than Luke gets
me. I mean, but like, how amazing would that scene be in live action where it's like Mara Jade, like controlled crash on the side of a like volcano, like climbing up, and then R2 is just like, I'm sorry, where did you think you were going? And like, she's gotta like get past R2, and that's not happening. In an X-Wing just messing with her. Like, that's so great. That's such good character development for him. And I love C-3PO in this too. Like, you know, it's like they sort of like, oh, you're so annoying, but like Leia loves him, and you know, and he comes through in the clutch at the end of this book to like be like, hey, by the way, I've been looking at these droids and you gotta check this. Filoni did something with that with AP-5, where AP-5 was like onto like an infiltrator droid and was like, you guys need to think about this. And, you know, he was brushed off. But, Filoni used essentially the same story.
Oh, AP-5, my favorite. We'll talk about it when we talk about Rebels, but oh boy.
Yeah.
Every time he shows up, I'm like, it's amazing. We just have Alan Rickman as a droid. It's my favorite thing ever.
Is that Alan Rickman's voice?
No, but it's the guy doing an Alan Rickman impression.
I was going to say, because I'm like, wait, that sounds just like
I think Alan Rickman, unfortunately, was dead by then, which is one of the saddest things ever.
I forgot he passed.
I know. Sorry.
He's one with the Force now.
Yeah, but he's totally doing, whoever that actor is doing an impression, because it's just Alan Rickman, and it's amazing, yeah. And it makes me so happy every time he talks.
Yeah, oh, AP5.
Yeah, so after reading this book, I am starting to see the light when it comes to your theory, Adam, of for Ahsoka, in that we might get some stuff here.
Multiple hands? Yes, I think we're getting a hand of the Emperor.
Are you thinking we might really get two hands of the Emperor here?
Well, in this, doesn't Thrawn at one point in this book say there were multiple hands of the Emperor? And Mara's like, no, it can't be.
So I have
it's impossible.
It's impossible. So I have notes, guys. I was like, last podcast I asked you if Mara and Thrawn talked at all, and you're like, nah. And then of course, bam, we get a scene with them. Maybe I didn't phrase my question clearly enough.
No, I forgot about the scene.
So did I.
Multiple hands.
Yeah. And that scene, because I was like, that scene would be lit. And I was wondering if she'd even go over and work with Thrawn at some point, but I don't feel like that's going to happen. Again, this is all fresh for me. You guys have read these books thoroughly and know them. So this is just a refresher for you. So I'm on the adventure. I don't know what's happening in the third book. But that was a great scene.
Neither do I.
He's like, what were you wearing?
Yeah, I haven't read the books in a long time, so it'll all be fresh when we get there. Yeah.
But dude, what? I'm just enjoying the heck out of this. And I'm not here to like compare. You can't compare this trilogy to the sequel trilogy because they're in different eras. There's like 30 years apart, even though you could sort of compare them to what we're getting now, because it's essentially 5 years ABY, which is like where The Mandalorian started. So, you know, I guess that they're being careful about this. Maybe this happened, maybe it didn't. And so much of it still could. There was a couple things where, like, Mon Mothma's like, who's this Grand Admiral? He's blue with red eyes. I don't know who that would be. And I think she would know in canon.
From Rebels, right?
Yeah, he was present enough. Unless no one was talking. No, because they were on Yavin base with Mon. So she would know what they were. And, yeah, they sent forces in to. Yes. So she definitely knew who Thrawn was at that point. So that's one of the deviations. But that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So
There's some other stuff. There's some other hitches, but it's.
Yeah.
I forget. I'll come up later.
I do want to spoiler alert. There are other Emperor's hands that come out later in other stuff. Yeah. And Mara Jade in a different book finds out that she's not the only one. It's definitive. Would you like to hear her quote when she finds out that she was not the only Emperor's hand?
Sure would, Adam. Thank you.
That's my favorite quote. He told me I was the only one, the only hand of the Emperor, his weapon of choice when he needed a scalpel rather than a sword. That lying, drooling, scum squallowing, superannuated, underhanded, festering, filth sucking parasite.
Amen, Mara.
Yeah.
So good.
Do you want to hear all the Emperor hands' names?
Sure, yeah.
Yes.
Kronal, Sakus, Jenga Droga, Jalar Golan, Raganda Ismaren, Mara Jade, Ves Kogo, Lumia, Arden Lin, Sarkhev Quest, that's a weird one, Shervan, Arion Silk,
wow,
Marek Steel.
So these are all force sensitives?
I believe so. I don't know, actually. That's a good question. I'll have to see if they, I don't know if it's required to be.
So that would be super exciting. And cherry picking, but like, if it makes for a good Star Wars, I'm into it. But I just feel like if you're gonna cherry pick stories, and I mean, I know they're re-sculpting the whole real thing,
and
picking things, but it's just like, dude, just get Thrawn. And I know Thrawn was consulted. I believe Filoni's there was a quote at some point that Thrawn has been in contact with Filoni about various things, but. Just get him on board. Give him a writing credit. Let him be in the writer's room, you know?
Thrawn?
I'm sorry. Did I say Thrawn? I meant Zahn.
Thrawn should be in every
Listen,
writer's room.
Listen, I'm Thrawn, saying but yeah. we've said it in before.
And Disney pay your writers.
The names Thrawn and Zahn are interchangeable. That's like always. You know which one I mean. Doesn't matter. They're both the same. But no, getting Zahn in on the in the writer's room, I just think, would be like that's how you really make it real.
I mean, a lot of his ideas were farmed already. Like, kill Skywalker, the Emperor saying that, and like in the books, if you read the novelizations of like the sequel trilogy, like that's sort of happening with. I don't know. It feels like someone's you know, the emperor shouting at someone. It feels like there's already ideas in here that are just the Katana fleet is the you know, the final order. Like there's so much that's already sort of in mind that I'm just, I would love Thrawn to be a you know, consultant on everything, period. Yeah. That's kind of incorporating his ideas, but
That's what I mean. It's like, I feel like, cause it's like, all right, you just mentioned the final order, right? And the hidden fleet in the outer, the unknown regions.
Yeah.
It's so much cooler to think of like a derelict rescued fleet than just like, oh yeah, for 20 years we've been building Star Destroyers in the unknown regions.
Under the ice.
It's also like Deus Ex fleet. It's like Palpatine just pulls the fleet out of nowhere. Yeah. And it's like, it's more fun if it's like almost everyone gets a chance to go find it, like in Indiana Jones relic or something. That is far more fun.
It was an adventure romp. It was a different type of Star Wars story in this, where like you had like four different storylines going at once. Three of them were intersecting with the fleet. They were like bouncing around with each other, accidentally going. One of your scenes when Han and Lando are on a ship and start peeling back the coverage on the seat, realizing we're on the planet. Yeah, they're on one of these things, like realizing this is
And this is that. And then how they all, like all the factions, arrive at the fleet at the same time, and it's like they didn't even mention there was like another guy that just like sold people some ships, and they're like, all right, someone else knows too. We don't know who he is. We end up, his name's like Captain Thornton or something like that. We just get his name like three times at the end of the book, and like we don't see any of it, but he's captured, and that's how Thrawn essentially captures the Katana fleet, the bulk of it.
Right.
And I it's like,
I also love the setup, like Talon Karr just bumping into the fleet.
Yeah,
like, that is so cool. That is such like a pirate's legend.
Dude, I know.
Like, it's so much.
Talon Karr is like Akbar tier, like. For me now, like how much I love that
incredible side
character. Because he fills in the gaps. Like he just walks into the political situation between Phalia,
the Bothan council
and they're having these so that's my second note, is Phalia. But him versus this political stalemate, again, very prescient, very current, right? Everyone knows this guy's corrupt, can't do the job, and yet they can't defeat his like political influence.
Surrounds himself with
sycophants and supporters. I mean, I like hate this guy, right? And he, like, no one seems to be able to defeat him. But then like Talon Karr just walks in and he's like, you're fake, you're phony, you're unqualified. And, you know, and like, and I'm going to expose you. And there it is. And like, he's able to, like, he can politically maneuver. He can strategically maneuver. He's just this great, like, you know, neutral party that comes in and like has a good heart. And so, naturally sides with the rebellion and helps them. And, you know, he's saving his own skin, but he sees this and he's like, this is wrong. I'm going to fix this, and just does it because he's got a good heart. Which does them a huge favor, I assume.
Yeah. Talon Karr, like, so many of these, like, old EU characters have started to become recanonized. You get, like, Prince Zizhor, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was huge in the old EU. We've seen him named. We've seen him pop up a couple times. Zero on Talon Karr, which I'm like, they got to be holding this character back, because it doesn't break new canon to bring this character in. It's a great character. It's a great pull. He's super important in the old EU. Like, he is there to the end of the old EU. Like, his number of appearances, like, he basically ends up becoming a father-in-law character to people. Like, it's pretty great. Like, I just am waiting for them to just pull that trigger. It's like, why not? Like, it's a wonderful, it's a different type of character as well.
Yeah.
Well, we also meet Senator Garm Bell Iblis in this book. And that character is fantastic as well. I was like, oh, this should definitely be a recanonization. Like, almost a character was there at the beginning, the Rebel Alliance.
I know. This is another one of those where it's like kind of.
So I was like, that was a hitch, right? Yeah. It was almost like, where is this character in the canon? Like, this feels like EU.
He could almost be in the room in Rogue One, because there was a bunch together and a bunch that peeled off.
Blood stripes in the background.
So the story for Grogu is that Senator Garm Bell Iblis was there in the beginning with Mon Mothma and our Senator Bail Organa at the formation of the Alliance. But it was kind of pushed out, he felt, by Mon Mothma because she's...
Yeah, Mon Mothma sort of became the face of the... What's interesting after watching Andor and reading all of that stuff and being like, Mon Mothma kind of became the face because she was able to inspire people. Yeah. And then this whole book's about everyone racing to go get the fleet, but also this political sort of cat and mouse game with, you know, people and allegiances, sort of testing allies and enemies and allegiances within the New Republic leadership. Yeah. And it feels like Mon Mothma, a lot of people are like, Mon Mothma is, you know, not to be trusted because, like, you know, there's a mole. There's a mole in our
console. Delta.
And
Delta
no
source.
One knows who to trust. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just such a fun story. And I was like, oh, this is so great. But I feel like the Bail Organa character is so much fun because he adds a whole other complexity to that. To that arc, that political intrigue that builds in the beginning. I was like, oh, it's such a fun character to bring in this midway through the story, kind of.
Another random rogue faction that was like there for the Alliance but decided to just stay independent. That's so great. It's just like in Andor, they're listing off all the factions that are rebelling against the Empire. And then there was this one and it just splintered off. It makes so much sense that there would be like this thing. And then like he's, he's Carillion. So Han reveres him, which is like Han doesn't revere anybody. That was a great.
Yeah, that was cool to see.
A good interplay between Lando and Han where Lando's just he's lying.
He's like, this guy can walk. I can see, was in and this guy, he's a faker. He can walk. That's a Lebowski reference. Okay. I shouldn't have to say that. I make a lot of references.
I was about to say, I assume.
Some of the Thrawn battle tactics, that they were great in this book. There's like an A-wing assault at some point. He's like, Ackbar must be missing because who would do an A-wing full assault like this? Like it just, and he's like, A-wings are better for hit and fade maneuvers. Like just, he was just saying cool stuff throughout the book. I was like, I don't know. Zahn does such a great job with his analysis of, starfighter combat.
I mean, of all the shiny things that Zahn does, I think his combat stuff is the shiniest, like, star of all the things. And in this book, there's not a lot of it. He sort of tones it down in favor of diplomacy and political intrigue.
Right. Yeah.
And then scoundrelism, like all this sort of, like film noir, like cat and mouse and,
Lando and Han just running around together.
Oh, so great. Good. And then like Luke's there too. And it just, you've got that feeling. And this is the feeling that I think is missing from canon now. It's just like when you get our heroes together, there's nothing that can stop them. And, it's like, oh, they're in a tight spot, but it's like, how are they going to find their way out? Kind of like Breaking Bad, it's like, how are they going to get their way out of this one? And it's just like, with creativity, with like Han's cleverness and Lando's connections and Luke's connection to the Force and Leia's diplomacy and Chewie's brute strength, there's nothing that they can't do, that they can't at least escape with their lives. And it's like, I want the good guys to win. I'm sorry. I know it's boring.
Isn't there a line where Han's like having some internal monologue where he's like, I know Luke's got the Force. I know, Chewie's got his strength. He's like, but I can outdo everyone with my pure chicanery.
Chicanery. Yeah.
Han knows he can just go in there and say a few lines and flex his charisma.
Yeah, his riz.
Or just make a fool of himself to be a distraction, and like that usually does it.
Yeah, if that's what works, he knows how to pull it together. Man, so great. All right, so this is where we started, but I want to get back to that. Failia is a failure, all right? I just like, I think as an antagonist, who is this guy? Like, who is he like kidding? And like my poor dude, Ackbar, somewhere in house arrest. And it's like, this guy can't lead. He's not even great at politics. I loved how they got into Bothan politics here. And Grant, this is what I want to challenge you with. Yes. I think the Bothans have always been corrupt. I think they're a corrupt species. I think they're bad peoples.
That's what makes them a fascinating faction to throw into Star Wars, as far as I'm concerned. Because if you look at history, You know, there's been many wars throughout history, and there's usually factions that are sort of like info brokers during the war, like almost like a third party. To me, that's like that's a fun part of the element, almost like a DJ, but an enterprise. You know what I mean? Like something that you can throw into the war. That's like almost like I almost wanted to see the people buying the X-Wings and the TIE fighters.
Oh,
and,
dude. I would love a whole episode on the Kuat Kuat drive.
Like, who's selling that? Like, yeah, like
sign our fleet systems.
Like, I want to see what's going on. Like, I want to see what is the hyper capitalist sort of military industrial complex like in the galaxy. I want to know what those factions are. I think the Bothans operate in that, and like on the InfoNet and on the Holonet,
but they're very self-serving, sort of like, and they're very petty.
They are.
Yeah, they are.
They
yeah, because they have Both in space. They're their own sector of the galaxy, really.
So they also have like they cannot. So when they have a grudge, that grudge is forever lasting. So in old EU, there was the Yuuzhan Vong War.
Sure.
Right. And the Yuuzhan Vong, I won't go into the whole thing, but for Grogu, like, wiped out tons of people, like, terraformed.
Extragalactic threat Coruscant, that is not affected by the Force.
The Force, don't feel the Force. They hate technology. They terraform planets. They terraformed, like, Coruscant.
Yeah. Big into self-mutilation.
But they, self-mutilation. They went after the Bothans. Everything got, like, solved, and the Bothans start a basically, like, The Bothans have a genocide clause in their species where if like a species wrongs them, they basically announce a forever war.
Oh my gosh.
And all Bothans have to kill this thing. So afterwards, like you don't get a lot of Yuuzhan Vong, but occasionally they'll pop up after the war ends where they're like, because there's like a subsect of Yuuzhan Vong that were like good, because you know, reasons.
Yeah. I mean,
and that were helpful and like actually helpful to ending the war. But the Bothans were like, cutting off their nose despite the face. Like every time they encountered them, they just killed them straight out. Like just killed them, even if they were just having a conversation like it's so it's a very Bothan trait, right? Of just like nothing. Like there's no forgiveness.
And they are self-serving. But I think that's what might make an arc in which they decide to help a Rebel Alliance, you know, like making that if you make a Rogue Two, you know, that other story of basically the Bothans that died to get the Death Star 2 plans. Like if that is one day a story that people want to execute on, I think that's actually, it would be fascinating to explore that faction and how they may have been reluctant to help, you know, other, you know, entities in the galaxy, but the Empire is so bad, we will sacrifice our own to get those plans. Like that is interesting to me. Like it is fun to bring in a faction like that, in my opinion.
Grant, so this is where I've got notes. Like you're talking about it like it was like virtuistic of the Bothans to steal those plans. Many Bothans died to get us these plans, right? But then you get to the next scene. So after our last podcast, I threw on Return of the Jedi because you challenged me to find Mara Jade.
We gave Ben homework and he did
it right away. So I found Mara Jade in Jabba's palace. Well, I think I'm going to post those. If you don't, I will post those posters on those pictures on Instagram of Mara Jade.
Oh, I can do it.
Because I'm convinced that's Mara Jade. In dyed white and blue hair. But so the other thing I noticed is like the Emperor is like, it was I who allowed those plans to be you know? And it was like, so, you know, I'm seeing Felia here being assisted maybe from the shadows by the Empire, maybe not, you know, they think for a lot in time in this book that he's the mole, which he still could be. I don't know. Right. Don't tell me who the Delta source is, please. But
I don't remember if it makes you
that does.
It's going to be a discovery for all of us again.
I feel like. Yeah, but I mean, maybe
I forgot about what the Dark Force was until I started rereading this book for the third time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The aforementioned Dark Force, the Katana fleet.
Yeah.
But there's also this Delta source. They know, you know, the New Republic knows they have a mole in, their highest rank. And, you know, and we don't know who that is, but it's like right now betting money is on Felia. Because he clearly at least took advantage of whatever erroneous thing happened to Akbar. And I guess we're going to have to wait till the next book to find out who really did that, because Talon Card, being the pimp he is, was like, I'm going to just go ahead and solve that for you and figure out who really did that, because you're not finding enough traction here. And I bet I can dig that out. And so I assume we'll find out in poor Akbar.
Well, I mean, Thrawn does remark that Felia is being used, like they are using Felia, like... They need Thrawn, Falia. Right. They need Falia to make the points he's making at the council and to travel where he's traveling and doing what he's doing because it's working in Thrawn's favor. It's remarked upon by Thrawn a couple times throughout the book. So
and the intimation is that like it was by design, not by accident.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So it's all that's already given to us. So we already know that the Bothan representatives are already corrupt. Like there's something about that that's corrupt. I think, like you said, they are self-serving and independent. I think that's what they're known for. So I think they'd have been on either side of the coin and been, you know, helping their own initiatives, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if they're outright evil or anything like that. I think maybe Falia, because I think Tabrello, the other one we meet, the other Bothan we meet later in the story.
Oh, he's even worse. Wait, the guy in the middle on New Cov?
Oh, yeah, he's bad too. Yeah.
That guy's lame. Yeah. He tried to get him killed. He was like, just shoot Han Solo right now. He was like, just shoot him. Like, that was his first instinct.
That's right. He wanted to take out Han. Well, that he
immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. He did want to take out Han immediately. Yeah.
I'm just saying they don't have a great track record. I mean, like, allegedly they got the plans for the Death Star, which I guess they did because it all ultimately it worked, right?
Yeah, but I mean, they're just like a super spy culture, though, and that's what's so intriguing to me. Yeah. I think that's and what actually, I like. It's super spies. And I was like, what other non-human culture is like a super intelligence info broker culture that's like has their own piece of the galaxy? And like to me, that's so interesting. I almost want like a Bothan character to be incorporated in a Disney Plus series for like 5 episodes to really hash it out, like really hash out what that means. What is Bothan space? How do they operate? How do they get information? How do they steal information? How do they, they slicing into stuff? What are they doing?
Star Wars suffers from monocultures.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Meaning that like if one character is introduced from a species is good at something, everyone that species is good at something.
See, but Nemoidians. They did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And even like Mon Cala a little bit, like every character species, but you know, like they're all what I'll commanders. Say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all good at like building things. But what I'll say is that like, I think this demonstrates kind of what we were talking about last week. Like we have two cultures kind of at the forefront, or non-human cultures at the forefront of this book, which is the Bothans, which are really prevalent in the New Republic storyline, and the Nogri, which is really prominent in the Empire
yes.
mm-hmm. subplot of this film, right? And the way the Empire treats the Nogri are, as we talked about, subhuman or sentient, not worth their time of day. And it's clearly coming to bite them in the ass, right?
Except for Thrawn.
Yeah, I don't know. Thrawn is somewhat kind of like dismissive of them a little bit. He understands them, but he clearly thinks less of them, right? Well, and then you get Leia come in and tries to understand their culture and tries to understand them. And so part of what my argument is that like the Empire fails because they treat anything non-human as lesser than, mm-hmm. which leads to active rebellion. And then you get the rebellion saying, yes, you as the Bothans like may not think the way we do, but maybe we can find common ground. Maybe we can use your skill set to our advantage, your spy network, your ability to be, you know, deceptive to actually get us the plans to the second Death Star. Right. Like it's this idea of like their New Republic is ultimately going to be successful because they bring in these cultures and try to identify their strengths and incorporate them into it. Yeah.
So great. I want to flip back to something we wanted to talk about at the beginning of the last podcast, which I bungled through tremendously. We were going to do a little round robin as to how, and we started doing it, but it didn't get recorded, about how we ran into this trilogy. And I'm going to start because my story is brief. I didn't.
That's amazing. It's truly amazing you dodged it.
My relationship with the EU was that I would be getting on a plane and not have anything to read, and I'd go into one of the Harper's or whatever bookstores.
Harper's,
And I would go to the Star Wars section, and there'd always be 6 books, and I'd just pull one off. And I'd be like, all right, I'm going to read this book on this trip. And so I, it was like a very, just like, I didn't care about order or anything. I was just like, this one looks good. And then I'd read it. So I didn't, I wasn't systematic. I didn't know that, I didn't have context for anything. I was just like, I'll just read this and it'll be a fun Star Wars. And you know, that would be my like plain book or whatever. So that's it. So that's my story. Grant, do you want to go next?
Fascinating. Yeah, I really remembered my first time when rereading this book in particular. I remember the Leia and the Nogri moments in this book. And I can just, I can see where I was in time, which was, I was at the local library. I was just a spinner rack at near the windows and where they had a bunch of just paperback books. And I think Dark Force Rising was there. Heir to the Empire was there, and I just like grabbed them and just sat in that sunny area and just buried into civilized. It. It was after watching the original trilogy on tape like a bunch of times, and so I was just like, I needed more, but I didn't read them in order. I'm almost certain I started with Dark Force Rising. Like someone had taken, someone had already rented, or, you know, had checked out Air.
Yeah,
so I think it was Dark Force Rising. I just, I was obsessed with Mara Jade. I didn't understand the sort of what the appeal was around the character, or if people didn't like the character. I remember thinking Mara Jade was such a cool, fun character to like jump into the story, and it really caught my eye. And I thought Thrawn was super cool, and I thought it was like the logical extension. I was like, oh yeah, it's fascinating that there would be a Grand Admiral that's sort of leading.
Yeah.
But again, this was pretty advanced for me reading this stuff. I was like, I remember not being able to track a lot of it, and just, and sort of like the Joris Sabaoth stuff had felt muddy to me. It felt like I couldn't track, like just an old cranky sort of guy who's losing his wits trying to teach Luke. I couldn't track with that stuff. It didn't feel as trackable as maybe other books were at the time that I was reading. And so I do think I couldn't respect what I was reading at the time. So now jumping back into it, I'm like,
with all the context. Well,
and I read it later around college too, when I was obsessed with Star Wars and getting back into stuff. But then rereading it now and having it fresh in my mind, it's like, and we talk critically about the sequel trilogy and the original trilogy and the prequels and all the time, and the new movies and the series. And it's so much fun to now take these books into that, you know, tapestry of knowledge and sort of be like, you know what? Zahn did this really well. Like, I'm hoping this happens at some point. I'm hoping Filoni does some of this stuff with more Emperor's hands or whatever. Like,
yeah.
And I thought Mara Jade was cool. So I remember that being a big thing for me when I was younger. Yeah. And Leia, I thought Leia was awesome. Han, I needed more Han. I needed more Luke. That's a big Luke.
Tasty Han, tasty Lando, tasty Luke. Like just great evolutions of all those characters.
Yeah. Incredible Lando material. And some of the, like, Last Shot came up when I was reading this again. I was like, did Last Shot sort of capture some of this Dark Force Rising energy that's like, Lando and Han are the most interesting characters in Star Wars.
Yeah. It's true. Give me Lando. I mean, we can talk about Lando news if we want.
I kind of want to give Adam a chance to speak, but then let's go into Lando.
Yeah, Adam.
Okay, I won't forget. So similar to Grant, I have a very, like, my wife and I just went to celebrate our anniversary in Portland, Maine for an evening. And so we were talking a lot about, like, thank you, about like music that hit and that kind of like sense memory of when you heard a song for the first time. So we did that for like 2 hours.
You and I did that on our trip, man. We had a good bro hang about music actually down in Florida.
Yeah, that's right. Great. I forgot about that. Yeah. Got into some Talking Heads.
We went down like a post and
other things.
Yeah.
But so similarly, I have a very specific reaction, and living in a multi-generational house, since last week, I was able to do some sleuthing to nail down the exact year. And I determined that I read this book for the first time a month after it came out, which is wild.
Wow.
Sounds about right to me.
I read this in June of 1991, and it was purely by accident. So I
happened to be a nerd and nailed it.
Yep. All of my nerdery came together. We would, at the end of my school year, every year for about like 6 years, we'd drive down to New Jersey, or my grandparents had a lake house that we would go to spend a week, because it was the only thing my parents could afford for vacation. It was like free vacation at the lake house. And we go, and the first thing I'd always do is go to the library and just pick out like 6 books to read. And I was just wandering through, very similar to Grant's story, I was wandering through and I saw a Star Wars book, and I'm like, wait, there are books? Like, I like that. That didn't make any sense to me. So it's so wild to think about the fact that I got it like a month after it came out. This is like really the beginning of the expansion of the EU, where they're like, we're making a concentrated effort to continue the story. And I just remember sitting in the back of my parents' car when, you know, it was the early 90s. They didn't care about throwing you in the back of a car without a seatbelt. You just roll around a little bit and read books, and spent 6 hours reading this book on the way down and reading it throughout it. And just the thing that always, there's a specific scene I talk about Chewie's dew claws and how much I think that's hilarious. And I talk about the Wookiee who has the speech impediment so can speak basic, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
But the scene that always sticks to me is when Luke breaks out of Talon Card's room by using his hand.
Yeah. Oh, he's a power cell.
His power cell. And I remember sitting in the back of the car reading that and just being like, that's amazing, right? Like, just like it felt like I could visualize it, right? So it felt like I was reading and watching another Star Wars movie, right? And so that I remember that. And then that was the same time as I was waiting for the fourth Dark Tower book to come out.
Wizard and Glass.
Wizard and Glass, which, as Ben, you will know, took forever. The amount of time between Wasteland and Wizard and Glass is a long time, especially when you're
a
teenager or when you're a young adult. So I remember the wait for that book and having, like, they would release, like, he released like a chapter. Remember, like, he would release like tease things about it. And similarly, like, the fact that I think they released, I think these books came out one every year for 3 years. I think they were kind of every May, which is funny that they're releasing it at the Star Wars time. That they would release
that was
a movie,
probably Kathy back then was like, this makes sense.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. And I just remember like how long those years were. So I do remember that like school year of just like going like bugging my local librarian about when the next Star Wars book would come out, because we didn't have the internet really back then.
Yeah.
Right. And she's like, it's coming out in May. Like, you are number one on the list, Adam. It is coming out on May. Like,
that is so adorable. I want to die.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah. So, special place. And then the second time I reread it when I was doing my chronological rereading was in grad school, and I really didn't want to do work. So I remember sitting on a couch reading this book.
Oh, so fun.
Not doing work. Yeah.
Just sucked you in.
It's just.
I was on flight too. That was
I guess I'm going to have to read that eventually too.
I could not put that one down.
I mean, we do have a fourth week. We could just read that.
I want to do a Rebels Day.
So good.
I agree. I'm mostly joking.
Yeah, but we can do it. There's no rules in the cantina. We can do whatever
just
we want.
Crushing EU books.
Smashing EU books. Let's see if Ahsoka requires it.
Yeah.
Right.
If it
ties in, then maybe we'll do a recall.
I think we were talking about doing a Rebels rewatch, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. If you want to jump on, Grant, I've already rewatched it, but I'm ready. So
I got like 13 episodes ago.
Couple episodes before Ahsoka. It's all like fresh in our mind. Sabine,
dude, I have got pages and pages of notes.
Cover all Sabine's arc, basically.
Yeah.
Because I don't want in Hera. I think we should. I don't know if we want to cover New Dawn and Rebels and go all in on Hera and just do the Hera cast, but like. I'm excited for that character to finally show up.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I'm pumped. Like, I'm all in for Mary Elizabeth Winstead's like Hera. I can't wait.
Yeah,
I'm so.
I did catch some new like photos, like professional press photos of Sabine. Sabine looks amazing. Pretty similar armor to the armor we saw her left off with. We also know we don't know what we're gonna get yet, but especially because they said like half of the season's going to be like. Pre that big the finale of Rebels, and then the other half will be post that, which I'm really excited about because that means they're going to fill in some gaps, let us know what Ahsoka was up to.
Wait, so since we're reading these books, I think we should talk about Thrawn and what we think we might get with Thrawn, given we're reading a lot of Thrawn right now, and sort of like, how did Zahn do Thrawn and how did Filoni do Thrawn and Rebels, and how he might marry the two? And, you know, like, that might be an interesting. Like, do you think we'll get a darker Thrawn now? Do you think Thrawn will be on a rampage?
This is the autumn of Thrawn, right? Like, I'm assuming they defeat Thrawn next book, I hope. And by defeat, I mean kill. I don't know. All right, you guys can't tell me. I'm sorry I asked. Forget I asked. Forget it.
I won't. No, no spoilers. We'll spoil it next week.
But I mean, like, we'll spoil this is his end game regarding the Empire, I would assume, sort of, to take it over. So maybe he has gone full evil. But it's a huge jump from when we last saw him in Chaos Rising or whatever. Or was Chaos Rising the prequel?
Yeah, but I mean, but we saw him throughout. I mean, in Rebels, I mean, I don't. The naming.
You were naming prequel books, that's for sure. Well, one of those books is like a super prequel, but I've
heard right. That's the first one.
All right.
Thrawn. Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Do we determine that we're just going with the E rating on this
treason?
On this new version?
Until someone stops us.
Okay, because the naming makes me batshit crazy. The naming stuff on it, I cannot.
I read all these and then I was like, wait, was Chaos Rising and Chaos Ascendancy two different trilogies?
I don't know.
I'm like, did he do four
trilogies?
I'm
pretty sure he's in Outbound Flight too. He's in Outbound Flight as well.
Was one a duology and not a trilogy? I've read all these books.
There is a Thrawn duology as well, written by Timothy Zahn, that I will talk about. We can talk about that one next week. After we've all finished this one. Ben, spoiler alert, no reason to read that, but we can talk about it briefly.
So there's another Thrawn.
I read that recently. There's a Thrawn duology.
Okay, so he lives. All right, got it.
Maybe
it's gonna be like Weekend at Bernie's for
next
2 weeks.
We will talk about this next week.
We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
Literally, I'm gonna pause it there. We will talk about this
it
next
is
week.
Is Weekend at Bernie's with Thrawn? Okay. Yes.
You can bring all of your questions next week.
But do you guys think we're going to get the Nogri? Do you guys think we're going to get Rook? Do you guys think we're going to get, we already have Pelion. We already know Pelion is in the mix here.
Pelion, definitely, because that is a known, I can't remember who that actor is, but that is a known good actor.
Made an appearance.
Yeah, and he's made an appearance on Mandalorian. Yeah.
Yep. In the time frame. I think it's a good character. I think it's a good foil for it could, like, you know, be able to explain his, it's a way to exposition without exposition, right? Is basically Pelion's there for exposition.
Are we getting
machine.
The Y Silamari, like the creature?
Ooh.
I can't imagine, but boy, do I hope so.
It's pretty iconic.
I want it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, here's the other thing I wanted to mention. So the other thing is, this book ends with the revelation that there are clones, right? That they are cloning. Yeah. And which I'm sure we'll see more in The Last Command. But the whole thing is that Han says, well, this means they could have a fully trained fleet in months now, not years, right? So granted, we're talking about messing around with, this was written well before whatever, but like the clones in the Clone Wars double aged, right? They aged twice as fast. And what we've been seeing now in some of the Mando stuff with how quickly they are, like, we got those like bad versions of Gideon in the tank, but they were adult Gideons, right? So it seems like they are playing with that they can now clone adults in a matter of months or a couple of years.
Seamlessly integrates with canon.
Yeah. So I think they're planning on, we're going to start playing around with clones again.
So,
probably I'm wondering if that's the kind of the big
it's
end.
It's mentioned
end.
In the sequel trilogy, right? Like Kylo's like, we should have done a clone
army. I wanted
army.
To use clones.
Wait, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Ahsoka's going to, I think that scene at the end of Dark Force Rising might be one of the closing end scenes of Ahsoka, is that she realizes, because imagine that to her too, to realize they're cloning people again after all of that connection.
Right.
And we know that Cody
terrifying.
Is going to be, is it Cody? Whichever one's going to be in Ahsoka. Oh, did I just spoil something?
Cody's going to be in Ahsoka?
Or not
Rex.
Is it Rex? Rex is going to be in Ahsoka. Sorry,
well,
Rex.
Yeah. No, that's fitting though. That's poetic because her best friends are clones. But if there's an evil cloning program that's been started, it's like, that's going to be a splitting.
Yeah.
That'll be splitting it down the middle for her, and that'll be a really great conflict for the character. So that's like super poetic. I love that.
And they're using the people again, right?
But do you think Thrawn is part of Exegol and part of the Final Order and gathering that massive?
I don't see how he couldn't be.
No,
you know.
Oh, that's so funny. You and I went the exact opposite direction.
Yeah. Nice.
All right, you first, Adam.
Because I don't think Thrawn gives two shits about the Force. Right, and about the Emperor. I think his view of the Emperor is like, he would be great if he wasn't so crazy.
But that
and power,
madam.
I mean, so I think it's coincidental. I think that that Thrawn will be defeated probably in the movie, and that his what he used for cloning will be taken by the Emperor and by the Exegol faction, right?
At like, a later I don't point think it's in a timeline?
At a later point, or you get someone who is working both sides. Or, I don't know, maybe there's an Emperor hand in espionage, like involved with stealing the technology. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, that priest... All right, so we know that Waylon and Mount Tantus are precedented thanks to Bad Batch. So it's like, if you aren't watching Bad Batch, you should. Put it on mute and just look how beautiful it is. But watch that show because it's great. And now in this, season two, they canonize Waylon and Mount Tantus, and it is a cloning operation.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could go, that presupposes that technology was taken to Exegol, but I sort of feel like at this point it's done in parallel. But I know, I guess there's enough time there. I just think that unless there was a curtain between it just kind of goes against the what was the it was called Operation Burn Down Everyone. What was it called?
Cinder.
Cinder. Yeah.
Like Operation Cinder was meant to clear the decks, and then they were just going to pull back into the unknown regions and create the final order. And we still don't know what the first order was about, but I just feel like the unknown regions is where Thrawn exists. That's his that's his turf. And, and we know he's a Grand Admiral. So he's as close to the Emperor as you can get.
Wait, we also find out there's 12 Grand Admirals
in
the Imperial.
Yeah.
Rank and file. Yeah,
I mean, that could rear its head as well. But I just feel like his proximity to the unknown regions and his his level is he's got to know what's going on. I mean, if he's rogue, no, I'm gonna take what we've got left here and do what I can with it. Like, this is enough for me. I don't need the final order. That's more exciting to me. But I find it hard to believe.
Do you want to hear an analogy that may get us off on a 10-minute tangent until Ben's like, stop talking about something that's not Star Wars.
Sure.
It feels like Dial of Destiny, right? He's Mads Mikkelsen and the Emperor's Hitler, right? And Hitler and so the Emperor did it wrong, and Thrawn is just like, I know how to do it right, right? Like, I know how to take what you did and do it right.
But in this analogy, Hitler's still pseudo alive or about to become alive the full Nazi regime built in.
Yeah, it's called The Boys of Brazil. We've all seen the movie. It's fine.
I haven't seen the movie.
it's
fine. Yeah. Hitler clothes running around Brazil.
A couple times, and it looks like there are some skirmishes on Republic vessels or something New Republic vessels. Makes me think Thrawn might steal some Republic ships. The threat might be real. And I hope that Thrawn puts the rest of the galaxy, on edge, because he's performing well. He's stealing things. He's has the New Republic scrambling, fighters on every system, because they don't know where he's going to strike next. I hope he really does present himself in the galaxy, honestly. That would be I also love the we get introduced to Niles Ferrier
Niles Ferrier,
right? Niles Ferrier.
He's a great character, man. Again,
remember that character?
Yeah, dude. How can you not? He's the only one in the galaxy that smokes these cigars, apparently. So that's note three.
Highlight character, absolute highlight character in the book. I hope the Thrawn we get is going to make some big moves in the galaxy. I can't imagine he just stay at the periphery for any longer than he already has.
He's definitely going to have a plan, right? I mean, he's always got a plan, and it's going to be to retake the galaxy from a sort of flawed New Republic, right? New Republic that's overextended and can't really, organize everything well enough to please everyone. And it's going to look, vulnerable to him. That's going to be exciting no matter what. That's one, the only for sure thing I know we're going to get. And I think he's going to be a little more mean spirited, and I hope he is anyways. You know, we got kind of a watered down Thrawn with Filoni a little bit, and he's still an exciting character, and he's still the character in Rebels, and it's a good representation of Thrawn. But again, I'm harping on this now, but did Zahn's a guy. Zahn knows how to, like, his flavor, his experience in this galaxy, writing this character, learning all these voices is honed. It is a, sharp tip. And, as for Filoni's fantastic, he knows how to compose a Star Wars perfectly. And he knows the tone of a Star Wars, but it's like, there's something about words to page that and coming up with these really exciting ideas, these new battle tactics. Like, imagine seeing a force board a large Star Destroyer or starship, and you having that sort of Beaches of Normandy scene on a starship as troopers come out, or rebellion, that happens in this book. And it's that never happened in Star Wars. And it's great. Zahn just has this encyclopedic knowledge of battle tactics and things that happened in battles, and all of them could be used in Star Wars and should be used in an exciting, I just want to see some variety. It's we had in The Force Awakens, and I love it, but it's another super star weapon, and it was not defined well enough. Yeah. It's but it can shoot through hyperspace, which you didn't know until
it's bigger.
It's No, there's a million fun things you could have done. That's just, and if it was just different, it would be instantaneously better to me, I think.
Yeah.
Let's just do something different. Right. And people aren't going to grouse about, oh, well, it's a hidden Starfleet this time, or a forgotten Starfleet that. No one's going to, cross about that.
What if it is Mount Tantus? What if that's the thing that's brought to life from animation?
It's a cloning facility. Yeah. All they do is bring the stakes down a little bit. And it's we're just trying to build an army here. And then suddenly all these possibilities come into shape.
Yeah. But that is a terrifying notion of just we spent all this time just defeating the Empire and getting rid of its structure, and they're just able to recreate all of their force in a matter of months, right? That is stakes. Those are stakes right there. Complete side note, did anyone notice the Dengar moment in this? And I was very excited for a moment that I thought they killed off Dengar, and I forgot it was a alias.
Yeah, someone used a Dengar alias, right?
Unless
they did actually kill Dengar.
It's Gunnar Groth is the name of the real names guy. The Gunnar Groth, who carried a Dengar ID to try to scare his foes. No, Dengar ends up also living really long in the old EU and retiring. He gets a retirement.
Oh, no one deserves it more than old Dengar.
I love that Leia goes back to Endor and points it out to the twins, the unborn twins.
Yeah.
And but avoids where Palpatine died and all that stuff. I was like, that was just a crazy scene. I was like, this is cool. This feels
so real.
Oh yeah, a realistic sort of tribute to the original trilogy. It didn't feel like forced. It felt like, oh no, she's just passing by.
But also it had that spirit of I hope history remembers this way.
Yeah.
And doesn't get, distorted by new victors or something that sort of bury this. She's like, that should have been the moment. And I mean, if you're really, now that I'm thinking about it, it's a little meta.
Yeah. Right.
Cause it's like, that was supposed to be the time. Right. And who defeated that? Well, we can say the First Order or whatever, but really it's Lucasfilm that was sort of kind of took a lot of that gravity away.
There's some cool things mentioned in this, like hive viruses.
Hive virus.
Yeah. The hive virus. Right.
I was virus. And that's how the dreadnoughts were lost in the first place, or all jumped together or something.
They all caught COVID and died.
So cool. It's such a deep
It was oh boy.
Adam, how are you feeling about that?
It piqued my anxiety. And then, there was also a moment where I don't remember if it was, I don't remember if it was Han or Luke, but they're just what was the feeling of the droids when they were clearing the bodies? What were the droids thinking when they were Like, I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, because there were pristine hallways. I love that.
Oh, and that's why they decided to decentralize ship functions, Leia says. Like,
yes.
This is some serious lore. This is Zahn.
Oh, dude, let's talk about that for a minute. So that's what's like, we're just, in the original trilogy, we're just plunged in this world where it's like there's droids everywhere and there's certain functions and the like panels are like a little clunky and like sort of basic. But this explains that. It's like sort of like, oh yeah, we tried the AI thing and it totally was terrible.
Like, there's like a lot of Dune in this book. Like,
there's a lot of Terminator. I know
there's
in this book.
The but what's that? The Butlerian Jihad.
The Butlerian Jihad.
But it's also Battlestar Galactica. Battlestar Galactica, the new Battlestar Galactica. So if you ever watch it, they're talking on landlines and they're printing stuff out. And they talk about the fact that because the Cylons, they unnetworked all of their computers because when they had this, the Cylons came about, they took advantage of that. So I was talking to Carly yesterday, who loves Battlestar. And I'm like, they stole it. They stole it from a Star Wars book. And I'm like, probably parallel thinking.
Yeah.
But still, it's kind of an amazing moment.
Yeah, it was great. And that's why it's like, no, we just use droids now. I'm like, perfect. Perfect. Thank you for that backfill. Yeah. I never knew I wanted. And now I've got it. And it's my world's a richer place.
Totally.
What else do we have here? A skip ray blast boat is in this book, which is one of the craziest looking ship designs.
Oh man, so there was two ship designs I looked up, and I'm sorry I haven't been.
Like, this is insane.
I haven't been. Oh my god. Oh man, I have a quote from. Oh god. All right, I'll go through quotes later. I think it was from the last book, and I was like, one ship looks like a dick, and the other one looks like a poop, and like that's That was the two designs that were like, I was like, what are these? It was in, you know, in the like massive fleet that,
there's a cool thing where Lando says he has a beck and call for the lady the ship like to appear
wherever
the
he ship is. Will just
land nearby. I was like, yes.
I love having like a deeper understanding of the Lady Luck and ships like this because I was familiar with them even though they weren't canon. Lady Luck is canon now, right? I think, Luke used it in that Sith book that we recently read.
Yeah.
And
I know, I can't think of it. I was thinking the same thing. I cannot remember what it's called.
Yeah, but I can't dig there right now. But and I'm like, oh, okay. So it's like, it's a luxury yacht. That's a much better descriptor for it. And it's like, it doesn't have like all the shielding and stuff that the Falcon does. We learned a lot more about the Millennium Falcon as far as like how it's wired and like and programmed. We get, you know, Talon Card and Mara Jade piloting it in this book. And their experience with it, it's just great seeing like a third party being like, what's even going to go on? And, you know, Luke was just like, don't worry about it. He's like, this thing's wired so crazy, it can fly with like less than half of the ship functioning. And because of all the, you know, things that Han's done to it.
Yeah.
I was thinking like game mechanic of the book when I read this book was Luke mind tricks someone to hear something from a certain direction. And I was like, you should be able to like lock onto the person and like aim the arrow around from like which way they heard something. And I was like, that's kind of my mechanic of the book that I walked away from. Game mechanic.
There's definitely a new force power here game where mechanic. He's like force casual. He's like, just, you're casual right now? Stay casual. I'm just going to take these jumpsuits. It's great to see you. How are you? Good. And yourself? And then walk out. And he's just like, stay casual. Everyone stay casual. And they're like, I am casual. And then Luke leaves like that. It's a, you know, but then he's like, oh no, these ones are too keyed up. I can't do it to him. I'm like, all right, now it's a defined.
Like, yeah. Han's like, can't you just like scramble their minds again? And he's just like, Han. Yeah. Can't do it all the time, but
right?
It's not a good thing.
Which I appreciate, right? There is this bit of him trying to determine what's
restraint,
what's a path to the dark side, which of these powers are okay to use, which ones aren't. And
turns out he's great.
I like
at
it a lot.
He's great at it. That's why it's like all that Sabaoth stuff is just like, no, dude. Like Luke knows what he's doing. Like he's fine. He's got a good moral center.
Tryhard though. I love that he's such a tryhard. Luke is like, wow.
He is.
He's not buying it. And Luke already starts leading him, like, you know, starts leading the conversation, which is great.
Yeah. Super fun book, man. Start to finish. All right. Oh, this is what we didn't talk about. There was a bit of news this week.
Shadow of the Sith. Sorry, that's the name of that book. It was driving me nuts.
Yeah, Shadow of the Sith was the one.
Shadow of the Sith.
Lady Luck was involved. And actually, that ties into this conversation well, because we get Billy Dee Williams era Lando. And so we revealed last week that Donald Glover is going to be taking over the producing and writing of the Lando series, which nothing against Justin Simien.
Well, apparently no one told Justin Simien.
Yeah, that was tragic and terrible, but okay. That politics aside, you know, and it would have been great with Justin Simien, but I mean, I think we were all surprised that it wasn't just Donald Glover writing and producing the series in the first place. And then suddenly it was revealed, and that is the case that Donald Glover's going to do it. And then, I can't think of the word right now, but it's not serendipitously, but coincidentally, Billy D. Williams released a cryptic X or tweet. I don't know what he's calling it now. Saying that he's like, good things are on the way. May the force be with you. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much it.
Pretty much it.
So, I mean, one could deduce that like Donald Glover gets the nod and he goes through his phone and he's like, Lando Calrissian, click. Hey, Billy D, it's me, Donald Glover. How are you doing in Acapulco or somewhere on some beach being fabulous is how I imagine every day of Billy D's life. And Billy D is like, I'm in.
Yep. All I want is that framing device we've talked about. The Calrissian Chronicles of just like Billy D narrating and also having like a little bit of a last adventure, but telling the story and then flashing back to Donald Glover.
Yeah. How fun would that be with it? I mean, if we get both, because like, Rise of Skywalker, Billy D Williams character, story, performance, flawless. Like for me, it made so much sense to have the last sort of like bastion of the rebellion be Lando Calrissian there.
The only thing I missed from that, which was on the cutting room floor, it's also in the novelization, is that we don't get really why Lando comes back. Right. Like we don't get that moment of him other than saying like, say hi to Leia for me, basically. But
I mean, Ray pitches him like, we need good pilots. We need good commanders and good pilots.
And so it's not a leap, right, to just be like, well, he thought about it. But you see the Knights of Ren trumping through the Millennium Falcon in it. And he goes, oh, no. Basically, like, you're not touching my ship. Yeah. Right. Like, and that's kind of the thing that gets him. Like he just sees that and knows that he's needed.
I kind of forgot about that. That makes a lot of sense. That's gonna be my I'm gonna watch Rise of Skywalker then, I guess.
I love that every episode we give Ben homework.
Well, all I need is the like motivation. And you know, it's not that I'm not always motivated, but I need like the heuristic, the like something to get my mind going.
Yeah, something spark.
And then
it.
I'm just like sit in my comfortable den with a giant Star Wars in front of me. And I just like it lately. It's just been this like salving bomb on my soul of just like a Star Wars. And I've loved it so much. You know, I watch all of Rebels and it was fantastic. But then there's something about the feature films that are just like pure magic and really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Like I would love a Princess Bride type Lando.
Yeah.
He is like Peter Falk, and he's
the Dread Pirate Roberts.
He starts it off, but then it kind of just turns into this Fantasia, this almost like Lando Fantasia through the galaxy. Like I mean,
that's amazing. Do we get the dangling Yana subplot?
Maybe. I think. Like, I mean, that makes sense. It's there. If like maybe that's like if we have Billy D. Lando, maybe that's a mission he's on and he's flashing back to Donald Glover occurrences.
Isn't he sharing the chronicles that Donald Glover's already been making? So it's just Billy D. sharing them and then he gets to go back and it's Donald Glover every time.
And sharing and doing your idea, Grant, of like the
Dread Pirate Roberts.
Of the Princess Bride, of just him telling her the story as they're flying in the Lady Luck, you know, trying to figure out who her parents are.
So he's telling, that's so sweet. Yeah, like he's telling like Sana and all that.
I also like the narrative, like how they break the fourth wall and they'll break out of the story midway.
Yeah.
Midway to Billy D's moment.
Yeah, I just like, there's no way it happened that way.
Billy D for longer than people would think commercially you would use the original actor.
Donald Glover is going to be amazing.
But I think you could really use Billy D.
Well, I think I literally like, I don't remember if it was the last episode before. I'm like, it's officially dead. We're never going to see a Lando series. Do you remember? I said that. I'm again, always so happy to be wrong. I just, the whole Justin Simeon, the whole timing thing, I don't like to laugh at people's misfortune, but like, it is, if you just take it out of it, to the fact that he was just like, someone asked him about it. He's like, I don't know. I haven't talked to anyone in forever. And then literally 2 days later,
it's on Vanity Fair. Like, he read it in Vanity Fair.
I know. And then 2 days later, they announce, and I'm like, it's like, oh yeah, dude, you were fired like 6 months ago. Not fired, but like, you were let go. Like, sounds like he was like a month ago and no one told him. Like, just be like,
that is
gave
cold,
him the courtesy
dude.
Of calling him and just being like, by the way, we're going another direction. I mean, he seems to be doing well. Didn't he write on Barbie? He's doing
Haunted Mansion right now, which is going to crash and burn, by the way. But
yeah, probably. But hey, Rosario's in it. So
Rosario's in that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to.
I don't know.
Jenny's
like a big haunt. Yeah. Now we just were at the Haunted Mansion like 2 weeks ago.
We had to go to another park just to go in the Haunted
Just
Mansion.
For my wife. And she was like all about it, but she was telling me about this movie, and she's like, I have a bad feeling about this. Despite the fact that Justin Simeon has been on it, and like all these great names are attached to it,
it's a fantastic ride, and I'm sure the movie's. There's been a couple. Versions of the movie, and
there's the Eddie Murphy one.
Yeah. Well, I'm paraphrasing Jenny here, but essentially, it's not like scary or gory enough for horror fans, and it's not like Disney. It's not friendly enough for kids. So it's like the demo is Disney adults that like this.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay,
which is like,
it's a narrow,
not a bad demo to go after, but it is narrow.
We'll find out.
It is not doing well on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it out already?
Not that that's the arbiter, of all things, but I'll be fascinated to see the. I mean, not to get too off tangent, but the box office stuff this year has been fascinating. What's hitting and what's not?
And I think it just needs.
So who knows?
It needs to play out longer too, because people just like you can't watch Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Mission Impossible like in the same in an opening weekend.
Right.
So whatever, it'll play out. But I think Justin Simeon, like, to his credit. Which, like, I really, really respect. It was like, he was like, listen, Donald Glover's amazing. So happy for him. Yep. Something about, he's like, as long as it's black, I've got its back or something was like the quote he said. And it was just like, let's go. And, happy for him. And like, that's so professional and so like kind of him because like, he was done dirty. That's like, come on, guys. Like, come on. Just like, pick up the phone, Kathy.
It's a hard story to crack, though, too, at the same time. I don't know. It's like, I don't, like, Star Wars is going in so many new directions right now. And, this would be a Lando series, just not connected to the Mandoverse, its own thing. And it's going to be delving back into the OT, basically, and sort of.
And we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delving in. Bob Iger also is, we talked about the evil Bond villain that is Bob Iger, talking about like.
Pay your writers,
the,
Bob.
I know. Just pay your fucking writers.
Yeah.
That he was just like saying that we're cutting down on stuff. And he is so. I mean, he is so metrics driven and star power driven that it might have been like. Oh no, we're canceling Lando. Like he might just be like, that is not going. That is 100% not going. And like, they called up Donald Glover and said, this is not going. He's like, well, what if I wrote it? And that might be enough for Bob Iger to be like, green light it, right? Because now you have that name power behind it. When Justin Simeon, who's great,
power.
Yeah, Justin Simeon's great.
Yeah, it's not, but it's not Donald Glover name power in terms of like zeitgeist, right? In terms of like, I think it is. I think Justin Simeon is amazing and it's done really great work. And I really want to see a stake on it. But like, in terms of like how to get butts in seats to watch it.
Donald Glover, Ludwig Göransson, sort of like,
yes,
came up again.
Oh my gosh, for this, dude, Vaporwave, like Göransson.
Yeah.
Oh, bro, dude, you just got me like, I'm going to run through that, like that wall behind me right now in like 2 seconds.
I feel like Donald Glover could sing on a lot of the music too. And you could like disguise it as alien vocals and not Lando. And there's so many ways to kind of differentiate.
Dude, imagine
really explore some stuff. If they made it,
I would love to be a fly on the wall of like their like recording dojo, the two of them just like making magic in a room, like all that.
Yeah. Ugh. And then it's like, but like it works perfectly with the visuals or whatever. Like, it's all one.
It's
great. Did you guys see Acolyte news or anything on the Acolyte?
No, what's going on?
I just heard I read somewhere that it was lots of, you know, real locations on location filming, and then lots of new non-humans.
Ooh,
awesome.
Okay, good.
All right.
And lots of Jedi. And I was like, I was just, we already covered all that before, but I was like, this is so exciting that it's trying to do a lot of the non-humans. It's trying to actually do that diversified sort of, like,
with a new time frame, right? Like, for live action, like, it, this might be the thing that cracks the code for Star Wars, being able to break out of, like, this, like, 5-year time period that we have to tell all Star Wars, or 10 years. I mean, so, you know what I mean? Like, which I love, but, like, I want us to, like, explore.
Yeah that's going to, I mean, it's going to be
Skeleton Crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's around the corner, right? That's coming up.
I think that's probably 2 years. I would say late 2024. I feel like
that's coming up.
I thought it was still scheduled for the end of this year.
This year?
I think this is early 2024.
It's got to be 2024. It's got to be, because we're going to get, is there anything after? So there's Ahsoka and then Bad Batch. Oh, no. There's Ahsoka and then Acolyte, I think, is the next thing after Ahsoka. But I don't think
Acolyte,
I think, is in next winter, or like January or February.
Skeleton Crew is still scheduled for 2023.
Yes.
Way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have they been? I haven't heard of them actually shooting.
I think it's finished.
But that's the same. Remember, I think it's finished. That's the same thing like Mando. Remember Mando? It wrapped late January 2023. So it's good to go. It'll be 8 episodes long. They might push it back. I wonder if they're going to push it back because of they need to start spacing out content because of the strikes. So they might push it back just so there's not
too much of a dead zone
to avoid the gap.
Yeah,
but it's good to go.
No kidding.
Like, it's ready to go. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun, because that is such a wild card, man.
I have no idea what to expect from that.
It could be this Outbound Flight book that y'all talk so much about.
Urkel's
Steve Irwin?
What's his name?
Jaleel White.
Sorry. I don't know why Irwin. Oh, because Irwin was the actual Urkel's name, right?
No, there's a log line for the show Irwin that's Urkel? Out there, yeah. though, I think.
Yeah.
If you go to IMDb, you can read, I think, the log line or summary of the show. And I think it's like a bunch of Jedi younglings or something. And Jude Law, I guess they're on board with Jude Law on this vessel.
I mean,
right, we did get a trailer for it. A secret trailer, though.
We did. We had to watch a pirated version of it. It's the same time frame as The Mandalorian and Ahsoka. So it is part of the Mandoverse.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if
Force
sensitives is my guess. Wow. They did reveal him having a lightsaber, right? I think. In the or something, yeah. I still think he's
Force sensitive.
He's force sensitive.
He used the force.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
I still
it took three of us, but
we got there. But I still think he's not. I think it's gonna be. This is always my gamble with everything. It's magnets, but I really do think it's gonna be a player. He's gonna be a rogue.
For
like a funny character. But I think they wouldn't. I don't know, because why would they do another freaking Jedi again? Enough with the Jedi in this time period. Why are there all? Why did all of the Jedi survive Order 66? I'm kind of getting sick. Hot take. I'm getting sick of so many Force users in this time period.
I'm the exact opposite, bro. Because it just makes sense. It's a giant. It's a giant space. You can't wrap your head around it. Yes, we focused on a few. You know, Caleb Doom, Ezra Bridger, Ahsoka Tano. But like, it just makes sense. There's more. I mean, and we know from Obi-Wan, there's more. It's a giant galaxy and people can disappear. So like, this actually makes me happy. It makes the galaxy feel bigger, where it's like, no, there was this other rando, Jude Law, that's, you know, force sensitive. And he was able to just disappear for a while. And now the force has brought him forward to carry through with this heroic mission.
That's cool. I don't like it, but they'll do it. They'll do it great. But here's the thing. They'll do it great and I'll like it. Does that make sense? Like, what always is like, I'm not excited by the premise, but the execution is, I'm always like, I'm on board now. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
I've come to expect that from Adam.
I always expect that, because I always said, like, Obi-Wan is always the example that proves the rule for me of just like, I was so down on that. I did not want it. I did not think we needed it. I did not want to see Obi-Wan and Vader cross blades again. And now that movie is important canon to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Or that show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It did feel like in the original trilogy that Jedi were quite rare, and that, you know, Darth Vader practiced an ancient religion. Like, it's weird that so many Jedi survived Order 66, but it's also fun to explore that. Maybe that's the next show we get, something that actually explores, you know, the path and how a lot of Jedi got out and, you know, all that stuff. So I would love something like that.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the new Jedi Order movie? You know, that there's so many Jedi out there. Like, how they're all going to be very old. They'll all be like Obi-Wan age, I mean, if they actually survive Order 66, or dead, or it's the next generation. But, like, so what does it mean for
them? If you're looking from, like, expiration from the old EU, as much as I'm griping about this, they did a lot of stuff of just, like, oh, one of the people in the X-Wing books happened to be Force-sensitive. Luke trained him. There's Kyle Katarn. There's, yes, like, there's enough of them floating around that by the time Luke started his school, similar to what we saw in the Book of Boba Fett,
yeah,
for some reason, you know, similar to what we see is, like, there are other teachers, right, that Luke helped kind of, like, get them over the finish line to being Jedi, right, who are Force-sensitive, yeah, and were, like, close enough. And there's a moment in Rebels, which we'll come back to, where, like, I got choked up where, you know, where Cael Doom or Kanan gets knighted.
Yes.
Right. In a vision.
Oh, right. Yes.
It's a so wonderful, good. It's a wonderful moment. And yeah, I think we're going to get some of that where, like, who knights?
Isn't that by the Luke's Temple Guard? Knighted, Temple Guard's, right, going, like, to kill him or something, and then
yeah.
I remember all
it's
that.
It's an amazing
yeah
moment.
Yeah, it was a big test, and Kanan passed, and he knights him, and it turns out to be the Grand Inquisitor.
Yeah, the Temple Guard's voice by Jason Isaac.
Oh, it was such a powerful moment. It was like, this is what amazing you need to continue on. It's like, you are a Jedi. I mean, he's really a Jedi master, right, because he's taught Ezra beautifully.
Yeah. And we get some of that with Luke, right? We feel that Luke got that. He passed the tests that were presented to him by, you know, Ben and Yoda. And now it seems like in the old EU, he was kind of doing the same for these individuals who were Force sensitive and had to learn the Force on their own, that he knighted them. So I think we're going to get some of that, that if we have this new Jedi Order, we are going to have people like maybe Ahsoka floating around, maybe whoever this person is in Skeleton Crew, you know, floating around and being teachers, bopping in and out.
I wonder about that. So I can't let go of this theory because we had it, and we might be completely wrong that all of these kids are Force sensitive. It could just be that it's just Jude Law and he's just saving kids, but that doesn't seem like a very compelling story. My betting money is that the kids are Force sensitive and that he is taking him to Luke's first school. Like, these are going to be,
that's,
like,
a great idea. He could also be a Force sensitive saving Force sensitives. That would be, that would be cool. Yes. He's not a Jedi.
The antithesis of the Inquisitors.
He's kind of a pirate. He's lived a kind of scoundrel life, maybe, or something. Whatever is fun for Jude Law to portray. But to me, that's so fun and so beautiful. If it's like, I have to save people who are hunted by the Empire, because I was hunted by the Empire in my youth, and therefore I, you know, took dark turns and, you know, whatever became this swashbuckler.
Yeah.
So.
Or I kind of see it too, or is it similar to Kanan's story, right? Where he is, I mean, Kanan's not really a scoundrel because when we meet up being a rebel, he's just part of a rebel cell. But similarly, in terms of, like, maybe Jude Law's character, old Force sensitive, hiding, repressing his powers, taking the life of a scoundrel.
Or import exporter, whatever he does, but it's
import exporter. Yeah. Ends up taking over a ship, grabbing a ship, and finding these stowaway kids.
That's right, great too. That I love been, that too.
Who have been, like, were taken by the, like, being brought to the Emperor, and then realizes they deal with Force sensitive, having to deal with, what do I do with these kids? What do I do with the fact that I do know the Force? Is there a safe haven where I can bring them? And maybe that the trip is trying to figure out where to bring these kids, and it, as it all ends at Luke's, you know, new temple.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean,
yeah.
I do wonder if Luke's ready to teach at this point, though, in the story. It seems like he just built the temple. Maybe, I don't know. Like,
is Luke ever ready to teach based on what we got in New Canon?
Yeah, right, I guess.
It
is funny that Ahsoka's just hanging out there, like, leaning against the tree. And I'm just like, are you, Are you going to teach some classes? Are you going to give a lecture? Like, is anything? Are you going to do anything?
I hope so, because Ahsoka seems much more ready to teach than Luke. Yeah, he needs.
He actually does really well with Grogu, but it does become like, you know, old samurai movie where it's like the sword, the ball.
I mean, for all we know, Luke was a great teacher, other than his nephew,
right?
Which is hard to teach family.
I almost that's almost what was. What I was missing from the sequels for me, which was like, can I get some of that angsty Kylo like and Luke tension where like,
yeah,
where's the favoritism, uncle? Like, I'm your blood, or like, and then, but Luke, of course, being a good teacher who treats everyone with the same, you know, gives everyone the same amount of time and treats everyone with the same amount of dignity. Like, he's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not, there's you know, Nepo
babies or in this he's overly critical of Kylo in order to avoid favoritism, right? So you have that
story. To me, that's fun because I think that's like harder. That's inevitably a part of that growth of and that failing, and then so it's like it would be a fun thing to explore. The student dynamics. Like, I hope they do get into it. I mean, like, in the New Jedi Order, we're getting student dynamics. It's going to be that entire, you know, almost like. Harry Potter is an IP that I've sort of lost interest in over the years. And it's like, it's so exciting now to get a new sort of fantasy, you know, academia sort of like
school-based.
I love that idea. So
it's still wild to me that they're doing it as a movie, which I'm excited about, but I'm like, do you want that to just be a series that goes like 7 to 10 seasons?
Across media, like the temple and every different medium, basically Rey's temple,
right? Yeah,
well, we might get that, right? If she just plants the seeds and there's a lot of established characters, and then like they go back and they tell the stories of Rey's school, you know, even maybe they do a 5-year time jump or something. Well, probably a 10-year time jump, you know, something more accurate.
I love that Rey is like, it basically sounds like Obi-Wan, and she's now like the Grand Master, so it's like,
yeah, she is
fishing. It's like,
she's done her homework, you know. It's like, if nothing else, she's an academic.
She's actually read the text,
and she knows the things. And like, she's like, okay, so now I have people like, go explore this and go explore this faction, and like this idea, go explore this idea, and tell me what you think. You're adept at this sort of thing, and like, what is healing now? What can we do with healing? Like, what could
I mean? I won't spoil the tragedy of Jason's Solo.
I do know that. That was one of the books I did read. It was his fault.
But one of the things that one of the things I do with this character prior to that is that he kind of goes on this on a vision questy type of thing where he just experiences all of other cultures' relationship with Force, which is one of the things I love. And I feel like Rey would have been a person who went out and went to like all these other cultures to figure out how they commune with the Force. And that's one of my favorite things that Zahn did in the new Thrawn trilogies is exploring the Chiss's relationship with the Force, right? And how that culture specifically uses the Force in only young people, only as navigators, also very Dune-like.
Yes.
But like, that's it. And then they outgrow it because they don't do any training, right? They don't lead them to do anything else other than, once their natural connection to the Force goes away because they haven't been trained how to keep that connection, it disappears. And they don't know there's this greater power ability to use the Force. I just love that idea.
How do you think the storytellers are going to portray Rey in sort of new trilogy storytelling? Is there going to be a tinge of Palpatine in the character, in the blend, no matter what? Or do they sort of let Rey be the lawful good?
I think they're going to make her lawful leader good. I think they're going to make her lawful good and extremely powerful for a lot of different reasons, but I think they're going to give people what some people wanted from Luke, right? Like, sage-wise, with questioning, where I don't know, like, I hope... You've talked a lot about Finn and Finn's possible role, but I really do hope that they have Finn calling her on her stuff occasionally, being like, you got to give these kids space, or you got to give these kids time, right? Like, this idea of just like, feel the pressure that Luke's feeling in the books that we read, right? This idea that like, she never, just like Luke, we now have two generations of Jedi who haven't had any stability in teaching. So like, right. It's wild to think about this. Is a person like generations removed now from the Jedi Order having to figure out how to create a school and teach. And I feel like there's gonna be like crisis of conscience in these films, or just this ability of just lack of confidence of how to teach. That's my thought.
Fascinating. Yeah, that would be great. I like the idea that she, in being all the Jedi, she is sort of the one light of the temple,
yeah,
and all of that sort of stuff. That idea is fantastic.
Could they do that to the Bene? Was it the Bene Gesserit? No, what's it?
Yeah,
the idea of just like
Bene Gesserit.
Terms of the fact that the matron women can access the memories of all that came before, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the whole thing of like they could do that with Rey, that she communes with all these old Force
that
users.
Would be so great, dude.
Yeah.
And she could train other people to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's something that's carried on.
I only wonder, do we get another Bloodlines moment though, where people are like, oh, you're related to their emperor? And it's like a
they
sort
could,
of
I hope
yeah.
not.
Again,
Rey. I hope that doesn't happen. We don't
need
that. Need,
like, it's not big swings. Probably Hollywood would look at it as big swings, but I just like think we need fresh. We need like some ideas and like her communing with the past and teaching others. This is a new, like a lot of new Force abilities that Rey has unearthed that changes the whole landscape of the role of the Jedi. And we know that the role of the Jedi has changed over the eons and it takes on different things. And it's like, they're not going to be defenders of the galaxy, but they're not going to be the, you know, Force police. Like, what are they now? Are they like, is it really, maybe that's the parallel. It's back to the origins of the Force. It's just sort of like, we're just really going to dedicate ourselves to sort of like what the Force wills. And, you know, this very Ahsoka, very Qui-Gon sort of doctrine and getting like, I don't know what it is, but like they need to turn the page and do something new. Like create a new role for the Jedi that we haven't seen before. And by need, I mean, that's what I hope for.
Yeah.
So antagonist in the new Jedi Order film is a student. It's like,
you're then somewhat recreating the old EU. That's, I can't remember the character's name, but like ends up getting seduced. And
I mean, maybe it's Jude Law, like Jude Law's character is just sort of like, no, I think we need to go in this. Or like they could create a sort of civil war of doctrines, you know, or in like I could see it, like Rey's very academic. So you could do a parallel to sort of the academic infighting that goes on as far as, like, no, this is the right thing to do. No, this is the right thing to do. And like, really, I mean, it could all be about that search for purpose for the Jedi and what they are. And she's got some confidence and there's like some really.
Well, there's got to be a threat. It's a Star Wars.
That's the thing. Right. It's a war, right? What's the war? Right. So if it's just one.
I don't want to push this towards like a war as the resolve.
It could be a new Sith.
It could be a new Sith
like emergence. Like it's not the Sith anymore. They're whatever, like Dark Force X or, you know, like.
Yeah.
And I'm saying X for a placeholder for like something that's actually smart. And like, and they, you know, and so they've evolved past that. And they're like, no, we're going to try and just grow our legions instead of the rule of two. We're going to get as many Force users as we can. And
you're bringing Daisy Ridley back. So she has to be like, there's a darkness like rising or something, you know, like you have to do some sort of line.
Or is
like,
it the New Republic?
Butts and seats.
Is the New Republic the antagonist?
Because we don't know who's running the New Republic right now, right? We don't know. Like,
maybe Mon Mothma's assassinated and someone else takes
There's
over.
There's a Bothan running it, right? Yeah. Who wants to conscript the Jedi to be their soldiers. Yeah. And there are wars that get sparked, right? There are battles that get sparked between the Jedi and the military. And you get to the point where obviously they'll be resolved. And I'm not saying that they'll turn into the Empire again, but there will be the resolution of just, we need to separate, I don't know, church and state.
Yeah, that could be the thing. I like the idea. We sort of flirted with about 100 episodes on Core World News where Rey herself might be the antagonist.
Yeah.
Where it's like she's, you know, she has this, there's this other dark force that's like calling to her all the time. And maybe, I don't know, maybe she's worn down by political infighting and dabbles in the dark side and or is possessed by a dark spirit or something that
takes releases a dark
or selfless
releases a dark spirit
just to destroy the darkness in a way that maybe causes her to get Palpatine eyes or something. That's an homage
or
to
the she's so thing. Obsessed or so worried about her lineage that she goes through some type of like through this quest of finding other things, a cleansing technique that really just releases an Abeloth type. There you go.
Right. That was it. That was your idea. They separate her darkness into a physical entity.
Are you talking about the mirror world? I wanted it with Luke, where I was like, what if Snoke was like, if Luke separated out his dark side nature?
And it's,
and
you
like,
know,
I always thought on like some mirror planet where like
it's very,
somehow gets trapped there. And then, like the Empire finds it and mines it out. I was like, this is ridiculous, but it was a crazy
you could do it and then still have them rejoined at the end with the understanding that we need our dark places as well, and not in a gray Jedi type of way, but that keeps us, that allows us to know where we don't need to go. Right, our temptation allows us to feel to know what good is, right, if we can see the evil that we want to do.
Guys,
I don't know why. What if you just bring another man in? What if you bring another like love interest for Rey into the mix, and it's like a big attachment commentary again?
Love
in
it
in a way that's like Kylo's dead, but he was evil. This is a good Jedi character. Finn maybe becomes a Jedi, and it's all about the Finn and Rey maybe relationship you didn't get in the sequels that you thought was going to be part of the main primary story, and that, or just another character. And it's like it's just commentary on like what attachment is, because like we don't get it. I don't know, it's just we get it in the dyad, but it's kind of like rushed, and it's kind of like not
right,
doesn't really harp on the Anakin.
You're speaking my language.
Regardless, that needs to be central.
All that stuff. It doesn't really
it
do
needs
all that.
To be central.
I've said numerous times
it needs to be central to what
if
they're
you're
talking
not going
to
address.
Yeah, almost like central to what George attachment. George was like beating around the bush, and it's like someone almost needs to go in there with a scalpel and be like, here's the different forms of it, of love and attachment, and here's how it can be unhealthy, and here's how it can be healthy, and here's where how it can tear relationships apart, here's how the galaxy can be torn asunder by something as petty as this, or something, you know, like things like that, and why the Jedi are truly afraid of it, or whatever.
It's going to be exciting there.
And maybe the stigma of it being, you know, over, I guess, zealous, right? It's like, why are the Jedi so against it? Yeah. Let's examine that as well. You know, like that's,
I will argue that Anakin's argument for why love is, or why attachment is
central.
Important to Jedi is central is not wrong. I think it's because, again, he was in a sect that did not allow him to voice those or feel comfortable talking to people it out, that was the problem. Again, I think the attachment part is works if you have complete honesty amongst people to have the conversations about what their feelings of attachment are leading them to do, because literally all of the prequel trilogy would not have happened if he could just go to Yoda and say, I love this woman and I have a vision that she's going to die.
What do we do together?
Yeah. What do we all do together? Right. And then they figure out that's Palpatine, and then they kill Palpatine, and it's all good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so they could solve Catholicism pretty much, or if they solve Christianity, like that would be a great mode for a new trilogy.
Yeah.
I think it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also Daisy Ridley is such an incredible, actor. And then, I just think that you could do something really fun with just the Shakespearean qualities of Star Wars with her and another, a Jedi character that she's grown quite close to in protecting the galaxy, in being a guardian of peace and justice in the galaxy, right? The duo, maybe a Three Musketeers, maybe like, I almost love a Three Musketeers, like a Trinity. Like I almost love what happens in the High Republic books with the sort of Elzar.
Right.
Avar and,
Avar and Stellan
Elzarman.
I love that. I think that's a smart approach, especially in a trilogy, because each film can highlight one of the three characters.
Yeah.
And you can get the side characters to start, and then you can do Rey maybe in that third one again or something, if that's what it is.
I mean,
you know,
when I look back though at the OT and when I'm reading this book, Dark Force Rising and Heir to the Empire, it's like it's more than just the original three. it's like Lando, R2-D2, Chewbacca, C-3PO are all very much part of that, like, Seven Samurai. Like, in they're rarely together, which is, fun to play with because they're such strong characters. But, like, that's the primary cadre, and they do things. Like, I'd love to see them dip into that whole, like, seven character large ensemble and then sort of play with that. No way Filoni's done masterfully, in Rebels.
Still.
So I think it could be more, because it's like, I just think that, like, the trilogy is a little too reductionist for, like, what it was. And I think they discovered, like, Zahn looked at that and was like, no, it's really the other characters too. Or maybe he just needed more characters to play with. But I mean, now that you're saying, like, a trilogy, an episode for each of these three pinnacle characters, I just don't know who the third would be. The second is, for me, is obviously Finn.
Yeah.
The third, I don't want to see a Poe Dameron movie.
No, well, it wouldn't fit in this. Yeah. It wouldn't fit in the new Jedi Order.
Maybe there's, like, an Oscar Isaac, scene, but I don't think.
I have to use him right, but it's fine.
I mean, Oscar Isaac, he's a fantastic actor, but it's just like, this character is, I don't know.
Well, it's called New Jedi Order. To me, it's like, we have to deal with Jedi characters. Yes. That's the only reason why I'm pitching three Musketeers, basically, because
you
have to deal with these new Jedi characters. And, like, do you want characters to come out of the fold, or do you want these all to be new students, is kind of what I'm trying to pitch you guys right now. I'm like,
that's the thing.
Is it cool if people come out of the shadows? Yeah. Like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I don't want it to all be legacy people. And I think Finn and Rey are enough. I'd like, give us a new character. That's what I mean. Like, for that third one,
because,
like,
new characters.
Yeah.
Right. We've
Give
talked
me a
about,
Talon card.
I think they said, what, a 15. Yeah, there you go. It's like a 15 year time jump is what they're doing. Right. I believe is what they said they're going for.
I didn't read that. That sounds right. Like a thing.
If that's what they're doing, which I think they are. That means that they are, like, she could have classes already graduated, right? Because if you're getting 10-year-olds who are force sensitive, they're 25 now, right? So there could be other, like, adult, Jedi that are trained and out there running missions.
Yeah, and then you could introduce some really interesting characters. I mean, it'd be more fun too if there was, like, a teenager, like, all star, who was in there was just like.
Yeah,
preternatural.
So that's also another pitch, is the ensemble, almost Amblin ensemble student film, which is like those kids all sensing power for the first time. One kid clenching their fist, in the trailer, feeling the power, and then, the power being abused, like that, like the ideas of Jedi who are misusing the Force, that stuff. I can easily see that angle too. Like, that's a whole angle. And then Rey is a professor. Rey's like,
well, you could do
a headmaster,
you could do it the X-Men style.
It's a different. And then that wouldn't be Daisy Ridley being the center role again, which maybe that's what it should. Maybe she already did that. Therefore, it's like, I will be this, leading academic at the school, like the headmistress. The grandmaster.
Grandmaster. You think back to, was it 99? The first X-Men movie, right? Like, you could play it off like that, where you have, it opens up with, like, a mission with four or five Jedi. That's who we're following. Getting another Force sensitive kid, and eventually you see Rey comes in and just handles the situation. Yeah. Like, Rey just has all of the power, right? And it's just,
I mean, if it's 15 years after, she's going to be overpowered. Yeah. And that, like, if we know anything about the balance of the Force, that means that there'll be an overpowered antagonist, arriving.
Right.
That Freddie Prinze Jr. math has to check out,
which has been proven wrong. I'm just going to say.
No. We've done the math, and it just depends on how many points you give Palpatine. If it just, I don't know how you are evaluating certain Force users in that.
Does
Palpatine get like 5 points?
As a statistician, nothing starts ruining the Force if you start trying to bring math.
Exactly.
Into it.
Yeah.
How many midichlorians? Wait.
Yeah. Exactly.
Let me count.
Yeah,
I need a midichlorian analysis, like, Excel spreadsheet right away. I have another question for you guys, and even though we're getting on to 2 hours right now,
yes,
And I'd like to, to say that, like, I'm worried about us running out of material, but it hasn't happened in 302 episodes. So
I know.
I don't think it's going to happen. Explain.
Yeah. Well, I will defend Bothans though. One last time.
Okay.
Though,
okay.
Because they took on a Star Destroyer. They like threw five of their capital ships at a Star Destroyer and took it out. And it was
well,
just,
but only over New Cov. You know, only like they never actually got their people on the ground in any other battles but New Cov. And this is 2 hours in, you're getting.
Listen, all I'm saying is they took out the bad guys
once. That's all I'm saying. In one strategic location.
I'll take it. That's all. That's it. I'm just throwing in facts.
It's dubious. Their commitment to the cause of hope is dubious.
Okay, ask your question. All right, continue.
My question is such a non sequitur, and it's gonna fry your brains. Yourself. What purpose does the First Order serve in the grand scheming of the Emperor?
I don't know. I don't think anyone knows.
I'm asking because I also don't know. Looking at this book, right? You know, it's just like this constant back and forth, and the Empire is fighting for its life. But as they're like reestablishing themselves, like the fleet of the First Order was supposed to be the intimidating factor. They have that the supremacy by itself is like a death machine, you know?
Yeah.
And they have like, you know, their AT-ATs are bigger now. And like the ATM-6, I think is what they're called. And like, they have all this weaponry, and like that should have been the like, oh my gosh, there's this other force, and it's this burgeoning, I guess. I mean, but like we talk to them like Blackwater, like a private military that sort of emerges. Like, were they just supposed to soften up the galaxy for the final order?
That's what I was about to say. Is they're just there to kind of like, exactly, soften it up. I guess, but I don't know why you need softening up if you have 1,000 Star Destroyers
that can destroy
1,000 planets. Death Stars. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Also like, weren't in the Bloodlines book, don't you learn that like the centrists were kind of looking for, they were kind of like loyalists to the Empire and were looking for some sort of resurgence of the Empire because there was order. And so the First Order to me is just like a stand-in military. There's a word for that I'm forgetting, but it's like it's almost like a proxy, but just it's almost like the stand-in for that sort of messaging that the Empire still exists in some way that I think Palpatine needed to keep as a constant in the galaxy.
That's the problem.
Like, we are the Empire. Like, the Empire is always there. Like, something.
I think it would have been better if, similar to what I was saying with Thrawn earlier, is if like the First Order. Okay, I'm gonna bring back Nazis again because the Empire, the Nazis, right?
Argentina.
So like, what if you had the First Order is basically your neo-Nazis, right? Like, you're these subgroups, these terrorist organizations that can sow violence and discord, but are not well organized, right? And then meanwhile, what actually been happening is like, Hitler fled to Argentina, had been building up the Nazi army again, and comes back and goes, oh no, these fools over here, these neo-Nazis, have nothing to do with us. We're the real threat. Like, to me, that would have been kind of amazing, is if the people you're fighting in the first two movies are this Blackwater, whatever, idolizing and loving the Empire, but not actually having any connection to the Empire. And then suddenly, like, oh no, while you've been fighting that war, we've been over here
doing the real thing,
building up our entire
fleet. It was a peaceful integration with like Allegiant Pride and like the Sith Eternal. And I was just like, wait, what? It wouldn't have been more compelling if Allegiant Pride like took out everyone who was part of the First Order and was like, oh no, this is a dark, far more evil regime. Like, you don't even,
you're not
in
good enough to be part of us.
Welcome to the dark side.
Like, we don't, you're not organized enough. Like, you don't fit with our regime. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
But they kept with like almost like a comedic tone.
But then it leads to Ben's question, which I do not have an answer for, of what was the First Order?
What was the purpose?
I don't know.
Also, there's theories that, like, I think if you read the books too, the novelizations, there's like Palpatine does want to perpetuate like pain and suffering in the galaxy, and like some part of the dark sorcery involved in his,
yeah,
you know, the Beaumont chin is talking about is like could be dependent on the suffering, and
that makes sense, you know, to me. It's been, like the, he can't just allow the like New Republic to flourish, so he needs to give like them some antagonization. But
couldn't that backfire horribly, kind of like it did? Because then it also helps them like form an army, because remember they didn't have an army, but then so like it actually provides them motivation to pull together a bunch of people to I don't know destroy Exegol. Like it's once again
it's like wow, oh we didn't show up at Crate, but we'll definitely show up to the next one.
And they do, because
it's like I know. And like, it's just like, the thing is, do you know what, to bring it all the way back around again, do you know what would have been really helpful for sowing discord? I don't know, a ton of Emperor's hands who could go out and assassinate people and like do it that way. Like that would have been much more sowing discord and fear than
a series of assassinations.
Assassinations.
Oh my gosh, my words. I think there's a lot of room to tell some stories there. Yeah. And 100%. I don't think it's going to happen soon, but I hope it happens. You know, it's like we're still early in the Mandoverse, which is this empty time period between the Battle of Jakku and the arrival of the First Order. But we they need to explain what is their purpose.
Guys, what if it is Thrawn who like decides on the new Apple like aesthetic and is looking at the two helmets? Great. He's like, you know what? Let's go. What this? Like, what if it is our guy?
Yeah, maybe he does create the
first architect of the First Order. Okay,
maybe,
you know, maybe he gets slapped down in this Filoni feature film, and then he like, you know, he has to build another military. But it's like, yeah, it's the First
Order is, what if the Thrawn? What if Thrawn's like the First Order is to like, you know, build the empire or rebuild the empire or something, you know? And like, what if the First Order alludes to Thrawn and they sort of remix everything to make it be like Thrawn's more in the mix in terms of creating the First Order?
I mean, that would be cool, but it's like, you, this is why Thrawn has to know about Exegol, because it's like like Armitage Hux and like, you know, there's these crossovers.
Who is Armitage Hux versus Thrawn? Like Thrawn should be in on this stuff.
And Snoke himself is like the connection between the Final Order and the First Order. So it's just like there are like indelible tethers between the two. So like, why did you do this little soft opening for the, you know, Final Order?
Right.
What if Thrawn has Luke's hand? I'm going to end the pod with that.
Well, it's been a great week, everyone. Thanks very much for stopping in.
I don't know. Because I could see that getting recanonized.
Actually a great segue into next week.
It's coming. So I don't know the name.
Talk about The Last Command.
The Last Command. Thrawn, The Last Command. We're going to review that next week. This is good now. This is working. We're doing this. That's what we're going to cover next week. And then the week after that, we're going to do a sort of catch-all Ahsoka podcast. We're going to talk about Rebels. We'll talk about Rebel Dawn. No, what is the name of the book?
New Dawn. I will be reading that. I'll read that just to jump
in. Good. I'll read the summary.
Kanan Harris.
Yeah, I'm going to read the summary. I remember that. Actually, it's a great Ray Sloan introduction.
It is.
There was a great Empire character they created for that was like a, you know, hybrid android affair, which was super fun. We're going to do that in 2 weeks. But next week we're going to talk about the final book of this Thrawn trilogy. So that's going to be great.
The Last Command.
Yes, can't wait. Gotcha. I just need to buy it and then read it. And then I'll talk to you next week about it. Can't wait to do it. Because it was super fun. I mean, this...
Highly doable.
I read this book in 2 days, so let's go.
They're super compelling.
All right. Thank you very much for listening to us this week. We really appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Please reach out to us. We have a whole new slate of contacts under Cantina Chronicles. You know, who talks to a podcast? I don't know. I don't talk to my podcast. But if you want to interact with us, we'd love to do it.
Yeah. Please do.
But yeah, so join us next week on another edition of
Cantina Chronicles.
Cantina Chronicles.
Yeah, you're all muted, so we're good.